Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
What's touched you to push to make Bound in the first place?
I tell everybody this because it's a place of, it's embarrassing. But I live in Ladera, Inglewood area, and I lived there for like 4 years, and I didn't know my neighbors, and I didn't want to know my neighbors. I'm living here in Africa in a black community, and I am alienating myself. Why? You know, why? When I was in Kenya, all I wanted to do was to connect with African Americans, but here I am now in their midst, and I'm like, what is this thing? You know? And then you sit and you start to look at everybody's face, and you look at every young, when I look at young black boys, 15, 16, 17 years old, because I have brothers who are 16, 17 years old, I literally see my brothers. And that just continued to like do this thing, like, no, you have to go in here, you have to go in here, you have to go in here. And I went in, and then I realized that it wasn't even me who had to go in there, that there's a call that's coming from way back that's saying, I need you to go in here for me. Because I need you as the people who are left behind, who are ripped from families. I need you to make me whole. And the other side is, I need you to make me whole. Because I think when me and you are here, we forget that before us, there were others who were torn apart. And who's making them whole? You know? And we have to do that. We have to do that. There's a reason why the 60s, there's a reason why Jim Crow ended in 64, and most African countries are getting their independence in 63, 64. Why is that? Why do we have a picture of Kwame Nkrumah and Martin Luther King? Why is that? Why did W.E.B. Du Bois start to speak about the independence of Africa and mentor African leaders? Why? You know, we can't stop asking, what did they see that we didn't, that we don't, or that we're seeing? Why did Isaiah need to find his DNA, get his lineage? Why? Why did he have that passion to do that? Why is he in Sierra Leone right now? Why did Regina King find a DNA? Oprah Winfrey, Whoopi Goldberg, why?
Could you describe the meaning of the title Bound?
Now, bound just means, it has a multitude of definitions. If you look at the definition of the word bound, it speaks about how we're connected to each other as a people, how we are connected to our own experiences, how it's just being bound to stuff. We are connected to our experiences, we are connected to each other, we are connected to humanity, we are connected to the great human story. It's all however you want to read it when you watch it. Then bound then becomes how you understand the African and African American story, or how you understand the story of black people and the rest of the world. Let me tell you the highest compliment anybody gave me. This was a friend of mine who watched half of the documentary and paused it and called me. And she said, I watched this and you managed to make me empathize with the African American experience. My job was done. That was it. Because if you could get the other side to see the other side of the story, your job is done. Because now people go into themselves. And now every time an African looks at an African-American, and every time an African-American looks at an African, you don't judge. You feel like you can go and ask a question and get the story. So what it is to be curious about each other. Let's not make decisions and conclusions. Let's be curious about one another.
The Cows. Justice Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the global system of racism. Today's date, Wednesday, November 26th, 2014. So I have been told. We will be back tomorrow. If you've been listening to the program for a while, you are very aware that we do not take vacations, holidays. I do not celebrate anything, so we will be in the building tomorrow. If you survive, if you're participating in all of the festivities and what have you, we will be here so you can give us the report on how things are. It should be very interesting. I'm actually curious for people, you know, who do celebrate and get down. And I want to be clear, I'm never knocking folks. If you're able to have constructive and great contact with your other black family members, that is fantastic. No problem with that at all. Hopefully it'll be constructive and enjoyable for everyone. But I'm very curious, just given what has happened this week, I'm very curious as to what is going to be the tone of conversation and what the subject matter will be around the dinner table or lunch table whenever folks eat, what the conversation will be like tomorrow, given what has been the major focus for the past 48, 72 hours this week. So we will be here tomorrow, normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will also be here on Friday and Saturday, continuing on the grind. The broadcast for today, hopefully, or I can't even say hopefully, make sure I remember to give gratitude, 404. She has been a long time, years of listening, participating, the whole nine. She gave me a reminder, basically, because our guest for today's program, I had seen her documentary film. I had seen interviews and reports and what have you about the project, the work that we're going to discuss today, and I had sent her an email to see if she would be interested in speaking with us on the program, but I didn't hear back from her. And so just, you know, the course of dealing with life, I was focused on other things and it kind of drifted out of my mind. And 404 saw it, and she posted it on my page, and she said, did you know about this, and, you know, why don't you see about having her on the program? And I was like, yeah, I know about it. I saw it. I emailed her before. I didn't hear back, but I will email her again because I thought it was important. And lo and behold, the second time, bang, she got back in touch with me and ready to roll. So thank you to 404 for the reminder. Always good to have a reminder. And yet another illustration of being persistent. Very important, especially anything directly, indirectly related to racism. Persistence. Very important. Our program for today, our guest, she was born on the continent, Kenya specifically, much like President Obama's ancestors. She migrated to the States to attend college. She has been here for some years now. She did a documentary film that was a part of the Seattle International Film Festival just a few months back. That's where I first saw it. That is my neck of the woods, and I think I've been here for some years now. I always see when the film festival is popping up, and I'll be walking right by the place where some of the events are going to go, and I'll get my brochure and be looking through, and a lot of times I think every year they have at least two or three films that I'll be really excited about, like, oh, man, I want to go see that, and then for whatever reason, I always get combobulated, displaced, confused, and I end up missing out every year, so I did not get to attend, unfortunately, but I saw it, I posted it, I shared, I saw some of the interviews that she did on some of the local Seattle stations, was really excited about it, and it is a hoot to have her on the program. The documentary film is titled Bound, Africans versus African Americans. You heard her during the audio segment at the beginning. that we just started off with. Folks who are familiar with Isaiah Washington, the black male, he was in Grey's Anatomy, Love Jones, Blue Caprice, about the D.C. sniper incident. He also was a part of the project. Real pleasure to have her on the program to hear more about her film and her views on racism in general. Joining us live, our guest, Miss Perez Owino. Let's see how cool I am if I can nab her line first time. Is this Miss Owino?
Yes, you're right.
Outstanding. I'm too cool. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your Wednesday evening with us. Real pleasure to have you on the program. I'm so glad persistence paid off. For our listeners, this might be their first time hearing from you. Anything that you think folks should know about you before we get started?
Oh, no, I think they'll probably figure me out by the time we're done with this interview. They'll probably know why.
Cool in the game. I already said you were born in Kenya. You are a black female, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding. This program, Context of White Supremacy, we start every broadcast off. Our definition, I've unfortunately concluded that we are in a global system of racism, white supremacy, the effects of racism. I think that's a big part of your documentary and what I've heard you talk about. The definition that I use for racism and white supremacy is as follows: a global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that's an accurate definition?
I think, and I'm going to say that, I think that may be a generalization of what actually exists. And because I think there is a system of oppression that does exist. My question is, who really makes up this system of oppression? You know what I mean? We've really dwindled it down to a specific race, but I think it's a little bit more specific than that. I think it's a system that has been put into place that really oppresses, not only just racially, but also classism also exists within that, wherein which you can actually use people with you can actually oppress your own race and use and do like kind of like a Jedi mind trick where you take the quote unquote disenfranchised and the marginalized people let me be more specific here so I'll be clear. Let's take a situation like the slavery in the United States, where in which you had the landowners, and the landowners had the so-called overseers, which in most cases were Caucasian, were white people. But they were not in the same position of power as the white people were. And then what you do is if you want to maintain your power, you use people within your same race who are not as powerful as you, but you give them a modicum of power by having them oppress the quote-unquote lesser races or the other races. So in essence, everybody is technically oppressed, but you have this buffer called race, where those people who are also oppressed just as you can't see it because they are part of the quote-unquote approved race. Does that make any sense?
I understand what you're saying, even though that is not my perspective in terms of racism, mm-hmm. the concept of racism and what's happening with this global system. What do you have a definition of racism?
You know, because, and the reason why I say it like that, because sometimes when I look at what's happening in Africa, for example, and the influx of quote-unquote China in Africa, that is not necessarily a white group of people, but I do have a feeling that whatever is happening in Africa in that regard may also lead towards a second colonial era, a second oppression, you get what I mean? So I don't think it's easy just to put it as it's this race versus this race. As much as it's not as easy as it's white versus black, as much as it is power versus the disenfranchised, and whoever has the power gets to determine, you know, how the road the rest of us go, so to speak. So I don't know. That's just based on my experience, but you also have to realize that when I look at America and let's take example, what has happened with what's happened in with the Michael Brown case and Trayvon Martin. I do see white oppression. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't see it. I do see it. I see oppression across the board. I see female oppression. I see gender oppression. I see sexual orientation oppression. You get what I mean? That's why I'm saying it's not as specific as that. That is a general way of determining it. But there are small little bits and pieces that fall underneath the whole thing, depending on who you are talking. Because, you know, there's a white gay male who might see himself as being oppressed. But you are, but you know, I guess you're specific. You're speaking specifically on race, right? Not necessarily gender and all the other stuff.
Well, it's not that I don't see that you have females being mistreated around the world. You have lots of mistreatment for a lot of different reasons all over the world. The thing that I try to be very clear about, when I say racism, white supremacy, that is war against black people specifically, especially, and non-white people in general, worldwide. And the thing that I try to be very clear about, I do not see a war against gay people or individuals if they want to say sexual orientation. I do not see a global war in all areas of people activity targeting individuals on the basis of sexual orientation or if you want to talk about class. I do not see that happening on a global scale. What I see with black people, especially non-white people on the whole, but especially black people, is strategic, methodical warfare, whether it's economics, whether it's law, whether it's education, in all areas of people activity, and nothing else compares to that on the planet. That's why I try to be very specific when I talk about racism, white supremacy, but that's my perspective. I could be in error. The one thing I would point out just really quickly with poor white people, in my view, that's it's just not accurate because a poor white person, even the poorest of the poor white people, I saw one of your stand-up routines where you were talking about coming to America and saying, oh, man, I've been lied to. I saw a poor white person. This is not, you know, what I thought. Joking. This is stand-up. Make sure everybody gets. But even that poor white person is in a much better position than a poor black person just on the basis of being white. And that is so staggering, and you see that at all levels, even if we're talking about the richest. But we take President Obama, even President Obama, comparing him to any other white president, President Obama clearly a victim of racism in that position, even at president, once you compare him to all the other white people who've had that office. Just, I think that's, it is a huge distinction, and that's why I don't think that's an accurate comparison to call in poor white people. But that notwithstanding,
I think,
it could be.
But you also have to realize that I was born and raised in a continent where I saw leaders, heads of state, doctors, everything that I saw that was affluent and successful and was black. So for me, actually seeing a poor white person was shocking because the images that I'd seen was that everybody was as successful as the black people that I'd seen. And that was, and so to come to the United States and suddenly see that there was poverty here, I was like, oh, wow. So they're not different from everybody else because the image that was that's promoted around the world is the image of the affluent, the beautiful, the successful Caucasian. That's what you see. The white person is always successful, and that's Hollywood. So when you come in and you see that it's the complete spectrum. To me, it was I don't even know how to describe it. It was shocking. It really actually was shocking, and I wonder why it was. But that's because also of the background that I have. Because when that's the image that is always sent to you, and that, here's the thing: the one thing that America has done flawlessly is America has exported its culture. That's what Hollywood does. Its culture, and with its culture, its goods and services. That's what Hollywood has done, where in which the rest of us have been depicted as not having a culture, being hopeless, and that's black people across the board. So our image has been one of lack, one of lack of intelligence, lack of skill, lack of just basic human dignity. And then the opposite has been given to us, as in black is wrong, white is the best thing ever. You know, so then the question then becomes, we who've bought into the lie, have we bought into the lie as black people? You know, because then if we've bought into the lie, then are we being oppressed still, or are we allowing oppression to persist because we have bought into the lie? Do you know what I mean? It's like it's this weird space where in which if you buy into the hype, then it's easier to be oppressed. Do you get what I mean?
Definitely. Go ahead. Do you have more?
Yeah. And so what we look at in Bound, which I think is really significant, is we just don't look at this tension that exists between Africans and African Americans. It was really important for us to look at the historical experiences of both groups and then to ask ourselves, has this experience changed our perceptions of ourselves? Because that's the key. If we see ourselves the way we are seen by others, then we have they need not oppress us anymore, because we'll just self-oppress at this point. Do you get what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that, you know, I get more information about the film before I move forward. As I said, I watched some of your stand-up, very talented Miss Owino doing stand-up, improv, filmmaker, hold on. In your routine, you were talking about coming here and going to the zoo and the monkey bed and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And then you said that you married a white man, and I wasn't sure if that was a joke. Was that the truth? Were you being honest? Was that a joke?
I know. I was we're divorced now, but yes, I was.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. See, the thing that's interesting about me that your audience it's very hard to pigeonhole me into anything, because I, as an artist specifically, I really do believe in experiencing life in all its entirety, and that everything I do produce as an artist is usually based on experience. Because I think when you do stuff, when your art reflects the experience that you've lived, then you can really come from a place of truth. You know what I mean? And it's not fabricating stuff. And just like Bound is not a fabrication. My comedy is not fabrication. It's really things that I have experienced coming to the United States and encountering people of African descent or African Americans. And I will say this, because I have said this publicly, and I'm not afraid to say this, but I have felt for a long time that this country has not been kind to my people. And I have said that. Just looking at the whole African-American experience, even till this very day, you know, it's not been kind.
And, understatement, in my opinion.
I know it's an understatement, but the emotion under it is coming from a place of what the African American has done for this nation from the onset to this very day. People need to sit down and look at that and understand that around the world, the black culture is synonymous with America. Around the world, the black culture is synonymous with America. Let me repeat that. There is no understanding America without understanding hip-hop. There isn't. That's the voice of America. And so that if the world understands this, I'm hoping America will at some point acknowledge the contributions that black Americans have done. And that black Americans will be very proud, because they literally do carry this country on their shoulders. They do. I've lived abroad. So I know the power of Beyonce. I know the power of Denzel Washington. I know the power of Will Smith. I know the power of these things. I know the power of Michael Jordan. Boy, do I know the power of Michael Jordan. So, and I would actually encourage a lot of African Americans, if they can, to visit Africa or just go somewhere other than, and then look at how that world, how that country you're in views America. The politics they don't like, but the culture they do, specifically those quote-unquote positive parts of black culture, that they appreciate. There is power in the black culture here, in the black community. I just feel like when you're inside it, you don't get to see how beautiful and strong and resilient and proud African Americans should be for what they've endured and how they have changed the world to be only 13% of a population.
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Miss Perez Owino with this film, Bound, Africans versus African Americans. In an interview, you said that this film, you were motivated for this project by your own, quote unquote, bad behavior.
Yes.
What were you talking about specifically?
And that's one of the reasons I really hesitate to generalize anymore in life. It's because I did that. I generalized. When we come here as, you know, as I can, let me not speak for other Africans, let me speak for myself, is when you come to the United States and at some point this division happens where it is me, the African, and them, the African-American, and look at them. What are they doing? This people, that. You know, we all fall into that rhetoric where we're the Africans, they're the African-Americans, we are here, they're there. And that there's that rift or whatever it is that has been sold to us about the African-American, we've bought into that. And whatever the African-American has been told about the African, they've bought into that. So there's this shame that we have for each other. I don't want to be associated with African-Americans as an African. I don't want to be associated with an African as an African-American. So then that begins to exist, and then we buy into it. You know, we buy into that hype that we are better than, or we are smarter than, or we are more driven than. You know, I bought into that hype, you know, where you look at people and you're like, why aren't these people taking advantage of the opportunities before them? Why aren't this, why aren't that, why aren't this, why aren't that? You're making all these judgments on people you don't even know. You don't even know their names. But you're already assuming their character. You know what I mean? Which is no different than what this police officer did. You know, he assumed the character of this young man and then shot him.
Branded him as a demon,
exactly.
According to his own testimony, which is not that far from the way white people, when they first arrived on the continent, characterized. But in fact, I think one of the other interviews that you did, you said the three C's, Christianity, civilization, or civilizing them, and consumerizing them.
Yes.
Can you just touch on that?
So, because a lot of people don't, well, this is one of the things we also realize, is how much we are not very familiar with each other's history. So there is the road that the enslaved African was taken down. That's the road of slavery. But the African back at the continent was colonized, and with colonialism came the three C's, to Christianize, to civilize, and to commercialize Africa, right? So at one point they came in and they were like, okay, these people are a bunch of heathens and some pagans, and, you know, we need to put the blood of Jesus on them, you know, and then they did that. And then with that came the missionary schools, and with the missionary schools came English and the changing of names. So, you know, if your name, giving people biblical names, people became Peter and Paul, so your ethnic name is thrown out. You're given a Christian name because you had to be baptized and have a Christian name to go to school. So you're given a Christian name, and there you go to school now. So now you're being civilized. You're being taught in the ways of the civilized person. And that basically means you're being taught everything you need to know about the West and capitalism, basically. So nothing about what you need to know about what's going on around you, what's going on in your country, about your people. No, you're sitting in a class in Africa studying the history of the United Kingdom, right? And now you're fully clothed, you're a Christian, and you know about the Queen, basically, in Africa, you know. And when they're commercializing it, they took the land, you know, the very fertile land they took it, they grew coffee, they grew tea, they grew cotton. And if that was your traditional land, you are now a squatter on that land. And in order for you to stay in that land, you have to pay a hut tax, which means you have to pay a tax for every single hut you have on that land. Because now you don't own that land. Now it belongs to the crown. And that is what was happening on the continent of Africa for 100 plus years. You know, this is just people walked in, staked a claim. Well, actually, they didn't walk in. They staked their claim in Berlin because they had the meeting in Berlin, all these European countries. And then they had a map of Africa, and then they split it up. And then they came and said, okay, this is ours. But nobody told the Africans that, of course, because, you know, nobody invited them to that meeting. So that is what colonialism is. And when you see all these Africans with all these strange names and speaking better English than the Queen, that's why. Colonialism.
Wow. The artwork for the film and the full title for the film, Bound: Africans vs. African Americans, A Silent Sibling Rivalry. You have two black children, both
yes.
black females, and they look like they're kind of playing with a water hose
yes.
out. What can you kind of tell us what was going on with the artwork?
Well, I picked that because when we had the whole concept done, you've seen the movie, so you know in the movie, in the poster, it's two girls, in the movie, two boys, you know that. I was just sitting in my house here, and I was trying to figure out what is the image that I would love to create that captures the essence of what Bound is, and nothing seemed right to me than two little kids playing with some water. Now, the water is symbolic because of the thing that divides us, Africans and African Americans. What divided us was really the ocean. And so the water was symbolic, and the fencing behind them was symbolic because we could have had them on two different sides of the fence, and I wanted to have them on the same side of the fence and playing. But as you also see, when you look at the artwork, you can see the for sale, the, what is it called? The flyer for the sailing for the selling of Africans is overlaid underneath it, so you see Negro for sale underneath, and so that was, and the reason why I put that underneath was to show that that was the history, that's what's behind us, that's what's behind these two girls who now are finding a way to play together, and hopefully in doing that we can emerge from this, because I believe it's really important for Africans and African Americans to find their way to each other, back to each other, because when we look at our history, our history changes very dramatically when we have a unified front. You know, if you look at the 60s and Kwame Nkrumah and Dr. Martin Luther King, and how that movement of the liberation of not just Africans, but of African people pushed the civil rights pushed the signing of the civil rights, as well as the independence of African nations. It's not coincidence that most African nations got independence in 63 and 64, and the Civil Rights Act was signed at this, within the same time frame. You get what I mean? When we are together, when we stand as one unified voice, we actually change the trajectory of all African people, at least on the continent of Africa and in the Americas. Or at least the United States.
You were working to get financing for this film, and I think you had,
yeah.
It was like a Kickstarter campaign
yes.
or a crowdsourcing campaign originally in 2011,
yes.
and you weren't able to get all the funds that you wanted for the project then. What do you think was hindering the fundraising effort at that time?
You know, I'm not sure, but 2011 had a lot of things going on. You know, everybody was very nervous because that was a time when everything that was too big to fail was failing. And financially, the country wasn't in a really sound place, one. Two, I think maybe there were people who were deterred by the title, and they thought that this was probably going to be one of those, you know, he said, she said, kind of as black people at their worst. Kind of movies, which it's not. And beyond that, I don't know. But one thing is for sure, it did get done. And sometimes I think that maybe we didn't get funded because, as I said, the ancestors knew better and wanted me to push even farther and deeper and to discover my own ability to persist and get something done. You never know with these things.
Wow. What was the final budget now that the film is done? What was the final budget for the project?
Oh, I can't even answer that question.
Do you have like a ballpark range?
No.
Like
no. I've with these things you have to like sign disclaimers and all this stuff that you will not say what the budget is. I actually don't have the number, and I'm not even at liberty to tell it. If I had it, I don't have those final figures.
Yeah. When you've been, exactly how long have you been in the States now?
Ooh, I have been here maybe, it's going on, it's almost 20 years now.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
In those 20 years, and particularly like the first 5 years or so when you're first, you know, newly here,
yeah.
you said that you, when you were living in Southern California, that you just kind of didn't associate with the African-Americans that were in that area. Were you mistreated? Like, did you have bad experiences where African-Americans were hostile or mean to you because you were from the continent?
Let me tell you what was interesting. I actually had a stronger relationship with the African-Americans when I was in Wisconsin, which is my first 5 years. Because we were on a university campus, and on a university campus when there's just like 6 of you or 12 of you, we find each other, and we were really quite close, actually, Africans and African-Americans and all that. But when I came to Los Angeles is a different beast in that what happened in L.A. was an extension of something that was already going on in Wisconsin, which was when I got to Wisconsin as a female. I'm actually darker skinned. I'm actually a darker skinned female. What then tended to happen was weird remarks that would come from African American males. Weird remarks about because of my dark skin. And I didn't notice it as much because I was very studious and I was really paying attention to my classes and I had 3 jobs and all that stuff. But when I came to LA and I was single female, every time I went around any environment that had African-American men, they just seemed to be this, I don't know how to put it, this, it's not that you were looked down upon, but it felt like that. It felt like you're too dark for us. So I was looked over a lot. And then what that led to was not that it wasn't like a conscious, like, I'm not going to hang out with them. But when people overlook you so much, what tends to happen is you start to overlook them, you know. And then it was weird because I'd go out with my girlfriends, and anytime I went out with any of my girlfriends who was lighter than me, which was pretty much all of them, you would have men walk in and have beautiful friends and literally pick out women around you and just walk off. And so you'd be left standing there like, wow. And they would compliment you. They'd be like, you're a beautiful sister. Where are you from? The motherland. Yeah, good. Then they look over and pick someone who's biracial. And it was fascinating. And what tended to happen in my life is more and more Caucasian men would approach me, which was something I didn't know would happen, but it just consistently happened. And then what tended to happen after that is, so my gaze turned to whoever I felt was more in sync with who I was. And then that naturally meant that I just avoided African-American males. And as a single female, that would be your initial point of entry into the African-American community, because once you meet an African-American man, he invites you to his family, then you meet all the family around him, then you are engaged into an African-American community. But that did not happen for me. So it's a disengaging happened. And so my gaze turned. And so I just didn't bother, and then it came to a point where even if one was checking me out, I wasn't checking him out at all, because I'd shut that down. Do you get what I mean, so to speak?
Wow, that is so fascinating.
Yeah, and that's how it happens. It's not like a conscious decision, like, I'm not going to hang out with these people. Something happens, especially with females. The point of entry into a community as a single woman would be through the male, who then introduces you to other people, and then that's how you go and you get into that community. Because when I go into a community of huge white families, I usually penetrate that community because I am with a white male. Otherwise, everybody else I know is from my job. So, and then that's what happens. So you get plugged into a family that way.
You know? Wow. Yeah. Just to respond, that sounds not so much that you were being rejected because you were an African, but just because you are a darker complexion female. And I know there's a lot of that happens for black people that were born right here in the States, be it L.A. or Wisconsin or what have you. That sounds more like just issue we talk about pretty regularly in terms of just colorism and again, the effect of colonialism, racism, white supremacy, where we just do not value each other, and how we have been taught that everything is beautiful, that's closer to white. You were saying they get passed over you to get a biracial female or someone who is at least a little bit lighter than you. That sounds, I mean, you can set me straight if I'm wrong, but that sounds like not so much a rejection because you were African, but because you were darker.
Yeah, it was that's a rejection of being darker skinned.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's definitely an objection of being darker skinned, but it's also, but what people don't realize is the majority or most of African women who will show up in the United States are going to be darker skinned. And it has become, well, then that becomes the narrative that we share with each other. Oh, yeah, they won't talk to you. Girl, you're too dark. Like, we will meet each other and be like, hey. And she's like, oh, I'm dating someone. I'm like, he's white, right? That's literally the first thing that'll be like, yeah. And then somebody's like, he's white. Yeah, it's a given. It's a given every time you meet a woman who's dark-skinned. Now, in my circle, that her husband or her boyfriend is probably white. And we will talk to each other about it. And, like, if someone comes in who's new to this and is an African woman, and she's like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to date. She's told right off the bat, you're not going to get an African-American man. You're way too dark for them. So just prepare yourself to be dating outside your race. So I was told that before I came to the United States, and I didn't believe it until it started to happen. And I was like, okay. And that bruises in ways that, you know, people can't even imagine. It does, because it feels like when you are rejected by your own, you know, and then since it's African Americans we meet here, then the generalization begins. That these men don't like their own women, then it becomes these people. That, you know what I mean? It balloons and becomes this big thing where now you're just like, I am not dealing with that group of people at all. They have issues. That happens. Yeah. So it's one small seed that then becomes this huge tree. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's that simple. It's that simple. It's that one simple seed. That simple.
Wow.
Yeah. Where now you just, every time, you know, you see anything, black males do certain things, you're like, well, that's just them. That's why we don't hang out with them. Oh, nobody wants to deal with all that. They have issues around this, they have issues around that, they have issues around this. And then the black women just keep pushing back, pulling back, 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 and they're officially out. Yeah, I don't know how it is with African men. I mean, I know there's a lady who said that African men have a tendency to date outside their race a lot, which I found strange, because I have a brother in the United States and he's married to a Colombian, Afro-Colombian woman, so she's black and Colombian, and my cousin is actually married to an African-American woman. So I was like, I don't think that is as true for the African man as it possibly is for the African woman.
That's interesting. I can give you a quick anecdote. This is attached to a question, but just because your film, it was at the Seattle Film Festival, and was at you had a screening at a high school here as well. And I'm here in Seattle. I was talking to a white man, and he said, and this is, I didn't know this guy, I had never met him. He just felt compelled to come up and chat. He said, I don't like dating African-American females because they are too ghetto. And I asked him to explain what that meant, and he explained. He gave, like, a verbal style of talking and some other things when he gave his explanation about what that meant. And he said, all of the black females that I date, they're from the continent, various parts of Africa. And he said, that's the female that I'm dating now. I forgot which country she was from, but someplace on the continent, he said he's dating her now. He's, like, 40, early 40s white male. And I wanted to know, is racism, because you said this is like a common experience for African females when they come here in terms of being rejected by African-American males, you're too dark or whatever, and being pursued by white males. Does racism pop up in that experience where any of the African females are saying that racism has been a problem in having these quote-unquote romances or dating these white men?
No, not really. I've not had any issue with any of the men I've dated. Both of them, they're American. My ex-husband is American, which is, there's not been an issue at all. It's strange because All my close female friends, for some odd reason, it wasn't like we planned this out. One is married to an American, one is married to an Australian, two are married to Germans. I don't think there's any married. One is. I don't think there's any married to an American, actually. No, one is married to an American. But there seems to be this. I don't know what it is, but it seems to be like this space where we do get approached. Like if you do meet Caucasian men, most of them will like you because you are not only just because you're black, but because you're black and foreign. Which I thought was strange the first time a man asked me that. He was very particular about me not being American. So I don't know what that is. No aspect of racism or degradation or anything of any point has ever happened. In fact, for someone, it's just been a very respectful, it's a beautiful dance. I have nothing negative to say about it in anything that I've experienced. Nothing at all.
Wow. What would your response be? I know some of our listeners, and there's a lot of scholarship. I can pick two popular examples, President Obama or Lupita Nyong'o, both who have connections to Kenya specifically, that white people in the United States, that they are more receptive to, and just, I think, as we were both kind of saying, that they do not think of black people who were born outside of the United States. They don't think of them the same way as they do black people that were born in the United States, and that's why the first, quote-unquote, African-American president is President Obama, whose father is Kenyan. That's why Lupita Nyong'o can be the most beautiful person in the world and on the cover and win an Academy Award, and she's darker, and people will say, oh, she's lovely, and she has her natural hair and all of this, and they would just fawn all over her. And then there are black people, black females specifically, who were born right here in the States, some in Wisconsin, who they will just talk bad about, and that's just, you know, a no good nigger and that sort of thing. What would your response be to say that, hey, white people in the States, they do not see you all, they do not treat you all with the same way, you're not experiencing the same type of racism that black people who are born right here in the States are experiencing?
If somebody says that we're not experiencing the same type of racism, is that
the
question?
States. Yes, ma'am.
That we don't experience the same type of racism in this. You know, when I did my stand-up routine, when I did my stand-up routine, you've watched it, the section that I talk about going to the department store. I was at a department store, and I had my African-American friend with me. And I was buying stuff. I was looking at stuff. And she pulled me aside, and she says, did you notice how that lady is just following you all over the place? And the first word that came out of my mouth explained to her where I am and the difference between how I see something and how she sees something. Because when she said, that girl is following you around the store, and my initial response to was, oh, thank God, because I need someone to hold this stuff. That literally is where I went. It did not occur to me that she thought I was trying to steal. I thought she was following me around so she can help me. So my initial instinct would be like to even bring her closer so she can carry stuff. It was so strange. And this girl looked at me and said, like, why would you think that? And I was like, because I did not grow up in an environment where that was happening on a constant. So it's not my default. You get what I mean? And so that, in essence, may be a place where we almost come into this environment neutral, where certain things that we could see or that an African-American would see and say, okay, that is an act of discrimination or racism, we don't necessarily see those. So we come into an environment less, how can I put it? But before even I put that, let me tell you something that's also very strange. If you left here right now and went to Europe, and I went to Europe, there'd be more respect for you in Europe than there would be for me, because they'd think I'm a prostitute. And they would think you're a hip-hop star. Do you get how that flips?
Oh, we've talked about that. I've heard that before from folks who travel.
Yeah.
That American passport does have some weight. You still are a black person, but that American passport does have some weight once you leave these borders.
Yeah, but you as an African American would be better received in Europe than an African would be. If that makes any sense. So it's almost like what's happening here, but the reverse.
That, like I said, I've heard that before. I do agree. We've talked about not just in Europe. I think we've read reports down in Brazil where people were there for the World Cup, and they were going to practice racism against the black person, but then they found out they were from America, and it was, oh, wait a minute. We can't treat them the way we treat our regular, you know, black people that are just born in Brazil. I've heard a lot of that from folks once you leave the States. But I guess just in the States specifically, specifically once white people find out that, oh, you were born in Kenya, you just came over here, do you think that you're treated differently, that they treat you differently than they treat African Americans, the white people we're talking about specifically in the States?
You know, that one is a little bit harder for me to answer, only because of the environments that I'm in. Most of the environments that I'm in are usually the professional environments where I'm going into work, or around friends. So I've never been in a place where I thought somebody treated me differently because of my race. Hold up. Actually, the two people who treated me differently because of my race, I think, were a little crazy, because they called me the N-word in public. And I thought that was just unusual to do unless you were out of your mind, because you don't know, I could have a stick and beat you upside your head, you know, but they did that. And there's actually one situation in which I was going house hunting, and a lady who's Caucasian called the police on me, and she stood out there waiting for the police to show up, and I was house hunting, and they asked me what I was doing in that neighborhood, and I said I was looking for an apartment, and the police were actually very upset, because I think they understood why she called. That was because I'm black. So there are moments when we do experience the racism. And I think the longer you stay in America as an African, the more you begin to see it. But it takes a while for you to see it. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I think it does. It just depends on whether we are choosing to see it or not. I think it happens. It's just how we as Africans are wired. We come from ethnically centric countries, not racial centric. So our first default is never race. My first default, if anything happens to me, is ethnicity. But I don't have that issue in the United States, so none of that ever shows up. Racism or ethnicity.
You know? Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So for me, it's because of ethnicity being the bigger issue, it's not hard for me to cross racial lines to date, because you know, I know I can take a man home and my mom wouldn't have a problem with it. Now, a different ethnic group, that might be a different issue. But, you know, so I think that's where Africans originate from. It's ethnicity is valued, is more valued than, is more looked upon than race, racial aspects of interpersonal relationships.
I see some of the folks that dialed in. I want to make sure I nab some of the folks who have called in with questions, but I definitely wanted to ask Isaiah Washington. Folks should know him from Love Jones and Grey's Anatomy and Blue Caprice and some of the other things where he had some trouble a while back. He got involved in this project, yes? Executive producer?
Yeah, he's a producer, actually.
Okay. What did he bring to the project? Why did he get involved?
Besides 25 years of legacy, if you read Isaiah's book, A Man from Another Land, it is really the quintessential journey that I hope and I believe, and I'll say the ancestors, as those who went before us, would hope that people would take. It's his story of finding his roots and finding his way back to Africa, and what that has done for his life, and that's how it's changed him and how he views himself at this point in time. I mean, it's a very inspirational book. It's fantastically written. I love it. And when I read the book, I looked at my co-producing partner, and I said, this is literally Bound personified. Somebody who teaches us how to find our way back to each other, which is what he does. And his day-to-day, Isaiah's day-to-day is literally about that. It's about building those bridges, brick by brick, brick by brick. And he has an extensive background in this industry, as you know. I mean, 25-plus years. So besides the fact that he brings the wisdom and the knowledge of how to navigate these waters, and he brings in his expertise and an amazing team of people. So I don't think I would have gotten as far as I did without his feedback, because he was there step by step watching every single cut and just constantly pushing me to keep going deeper and deeper and find the truth and find your voice. And it's amazing, and I'm very, very humbled that he took the time to walk this road with us.
Right on. No, a lot of folks are big fans of his work. Before I hit the caller, in the film, a lot of or several of the shots that you have where it'll be folks speaking and kind of giving their views, you have them in a mirror. What was the purpose?
Yes.
What was the effect that you were trying to create with that?
Well, the mirror thing was, what we wanted to do with the mirror was, that's your truth. You're telling us your truth, your experience, your point of view. Now speak it to yourself. Because whatever it is you say, that's a reflection of who you are, you know. And if I'm saying something about the African-American and I'm looking into the mirror, know that you're saying something about yourself. Because in essence, if we are twin souls, if we are from the same source, Africans and African-Americans, for me to feel any shame towards me, for me to feel any negative feeling towards you, you are my brother. We are from the same source. I am literally speaking about myself, you know, as a black person. Whatever label I put on you based on your blackness, your Africanness, I'm inevitably speaking about myself.
Again, Ms. Perez Owino, filmmaker for Bound, Africans versus African Americans, a silent sibling rivalry. Real pleasure to have her on the program. Folks have questions, star 6, and we will get you on the line. Our caller in Florida, did you have a question for Ms. Owino? Your line should be open. Caller in Florida, did you have a question? Line should be open.
Greetings. I just had my mute button on. I've always been curious about the term African-American. I always thought it was confusing in itself. My question would be to the guests is, do you think the term is confusing, and or do you think it's clear in describing a person or a group of people?
Is the term African American confusing? I guess, it depends.
Can I give you an example? I'm not very clear on what I'm asking you. I believe Mr. John Kerry is the Secretary of State. He's in that position in this part of the world. From my understanding, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, from my understanding, his wife is a, quote-unquote, is a white female that was born in Africa.
Oh.
And in turn, she came over here, immigrated into what is called the United States, and became an American citizen. And that makes her an African American.
Oh,
so that's why I always view the term African American as confusing.
Because anybody who comes from the continent, you believe, can label themselves that. But you, so here's the thing. So, are we attaching African American to a race of people based on, is African American the way you look? Is African American where you come from? Is African-American where your heritage comes from? I mean, I think at this point in time, I've always found it very interesting with all these American labels, you know, African American, Asian American, it's this is the only country that does that. It really just is. I mean, I've always wondered why people weren't just Americans, why that was never good enough, and what was this need to fragment the peoples. So it can be confusing if you were expecting the term African American to identify a race.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is where you can find the confusion, because on the continent of Africa, I believe, there are people of every race at this point. And so when they cross over and they come to the United States, then they're asked, where are they from? They will inevitably say Africa, and then they will check African American as being, I'm from Africa, I'm living in America. So
that's
the only way I know it. So it's confusing if you assume or expect the term African American to identify a race of people as opposed to an ethnic background or place of birth. Yeah.
Well, being that you said that, that's commonly how it is formally identified. Mm-hmm. In other words, most people who fill out different applications for employment or whatever that has racial that access the person who is filling out the form about racial classification.
Yes.
That's one of them. That's one of the identifications.
Yeah.
As far as under the subject of racial classification.
Mm-hmm. So then that's what makes it tricky, because if it's a racial classification and people do Black/African American, and then that clarifies this, I guess, as opposed to just African American, then that would confuse people. For me, if I was to check that box, I'm checking African American because I'm an African in American and in America, and I'm darker skin. I'm of African descent. So you're right; it could be confusing based on how everybody is perceiving that title, what everybody thinks that title means. Then there's no. Then it probably requires more clarification, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I actually, over the past maybe 15, 20 years, if I did fill out that particular section, I put under the column of when they have the other choice, I will put down there NWVOR, which stands for non-white victim of racism, white supremacy.
You know, what is interesting is I actually have met a group of people who do not like to be called African at all, or African American, or just the term African, because that is named after a Roman general and Africanus, and they would rather prefer to be called, to say they come from Kemet, which is the ancient name of the continent. So, and this all plays into the whole aspect of we understanding who we are and our own history. And once we start to learn our own history, which goes farther back than any other history we've ever been taught, then we can start reclaiming who we are. And I think that's where the ball has been dropped. Thanks to the experiences we've had, you know, slavery and colonialism, we kind of lost touch with our own history, the core of who we are, and the things we have to be proud of, because our legacy is extensive, but we need to reconnect with it so that we can have people, so that we don't have other people labeling us, because we have a clear understanding of who we are and we walk in the truth of that.
Is it the term or name or word African is a recent word? And it comes from generally a white person?
Yes, that's why I was talking about. There are people who do not like to be called African or African American or African or any of that stuff, because
yeah.
It is not the name of the continent is Kemet, not Africa. And so, you know, and this is all coming out now because people are digging deeper into our history and beginning to find truths that were hidden because we are too busy learning everybody else's history and not our own.
Wouldn't people over in that part of the world be more identifiable about maybe the tribe that they're from, Igbo, or
Mm-hmm. There is no, the beauty of that is that connects us to something older than Africa, the term Africa, and it connects us to something older than colonialism.
Right, right.
You know, yeah.
I would even suspect that there's some people in that part of the world that, I don't know, I didn't know I was an African. I always identify myself as Igbo or whatever, you know, they identify themselves with in their circle. Okay.
Yeah, because when you look at the countries were created by Europeans. Those are not African-formed countries. No African group of people sat together and said, "This is going to be. We're going to call this place Nigeria. We're going to call this place Kenya." Those are not African-generated nations. They're generated by the West, and so that's why you see a lot of a lot of countries and places fragmenting because people are trying to revert back to tribal lands and whatever, for lack of a better term, or ancestral lands, because you have places where in which with colonialism, ancestral lands were split in half, where you have a group of people who are connected, who are relatives, are split into two countries. Half is in Benin, half is in Togo, and either you have to talk to your cousin, you've got to pick up a phone and call Togo, and it goes through telephone lines and signals in France. It's crazy. It's just a lot of family disruption happened with slavery and colonialism, a lot of violent family disruption. And so I think Africa is trying to figure, because you have to understand this nation states that you're looking at now are at the most 60 years old, so they're not even a century old. And so it's the birth pain of nationalism and people trying to figure themselves out and how do we live within these borders that are not of our creation? How do we now, as a Luo, surrender myself to a president who's from a different ethnic group who really doesn't understand my people? So you have all these dynamics that are coming into play on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did that get your question, caller in Florida?
Yes, sir. I was thinking about one more if I have the time, or maybe you need to pass on. But I was just thinking about, do you think in order to help the problem, do you think by non-white people rallying around codification, which is saying and doing things, would that provide a better relationship between non-white people who are in this part of the world with non-white people all over the world? Do you think some sort of universal codification would help correct the issues or problems that we have amongst ourselves?
You know, one thing that I think that may be the fundamental issue with humanity right now is this idea, and I know it's an old human need, this idea to cluster, which is great, us clustering. But I think more important than us clustering as race or as non-whites or as whites or as Asians or whatever is to cluster within our communities. I think that this is going to be, it takes, and one of the things we did with Bound was we took core groups of people. We don't have any celebrities except, of course, Isaiah and Dr. DeGruy. We don't have celebrities. We just use basic people, because what we wanted to get everybody to understand is, in order for you to invoke any kind of change, you have to start thinking in the most minute sense. You have to start thinking like a village. What is your village? Who is around you? How do you start a dialogue with the people around you so that you understand their narrative and therefore their experience, and they understand your narrative and your experience? In this way, so that we as humanity can start beginning to empathize with each other as opposed to judging each other. Because if you look at this, there's a great, I can't even remember the name, but there is a theater company out in New York. And what they're doing right now is they're getting police officers in NYPD to sit in clusters, just like we did in Bound, with young African-American men and to hear each other's stories. We have to start making each other human and understand that each and every one of us is reacting as is expected based on our historical narrative. Whatever the person from Asia or the person from Europe or the person of Africa is doing, it's a direct relation, it's directly correlated to their historical experience, to the experience of them, what was handed down by their dad, what was handed down by their dad's, their grandmother. It's a through line. And Dr. Joy DeGruy speaks of it so flawlessly when she deals with post-traumatic slave syndrome. She connects the dots about how what we are doing today is a reflection of a wound that happened a long time ago. And it goes beyond just people of non-color getting it. Because guess what, sweetie? Even if people of color clustered together and ignored white people, we're still on the same continent. We're still on the same continent. So we breathe together. We live together. We die together. So we have to start realizing that all we have to do is start to create allies, whoever those allies may be. Find them. And sometimes you may be surprised that your allies may be the same people that you're thinking are your enemies. You never know. You never know.
I want to make sure we nab the other folks who dialed in. I definitely appreciate the questions, our caller in Florida. The person who dialed in from a block number, did you have a question for Ms. Owino? Your line should be open.
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Gus and Justice, for the program today. Good evening to everyone here today. This is my university to learn how racism, white supremacy operates. I am still learning. Thank you, Ms. Owino, for being on the program today. Ms. Owino, do you believe racism, white supremacy exists?
I do believe it exists.
What is your definition of racism, white supremacy?
That's so hard for me to define. We do know what racism is. Racism definitely is the systemic oppression of a group of people, which means it's not just you feeling that you are better than someone, but you also have to have the power to oppress those people, you know, when it comes to denying food, clothing, and shelter. I do believe it exists. But you're talking to somebody who also comes from the continent of Africa, wherein which, for us on the continent, for those of you who are familiar with Africa, oppression does not just come in a quote-unquote white race. Africa is being oppressed on a daily basis from all corners. You get what I mean? It's being oppressed from all corners. And some of the oppression that's coming up in Africa, and I'm just speaking as an African, comes from Africans themselves. When you have world leaders who are literally robbing and raping the continent blind. So for me, I do understand that this is really about white racism. But for me, it's not as easy to just say Kenya is going to hell in a handbasket because of white people in the United Kingdom. I do know that there are allies also in Kenya, my own people, who are participating.
Who do you believe is making the final decision that impact black people's lives in all areas of people activity? And I say people activity is mm-hmm. the areas of economic, education, entertainment, health, labor, law, politics, mm-hmm. religion, sex, and war.
Now, if you ask me that question, I'm going to ask you to pick one location. Because if you ask me who's doing that in Sudan, I have a completely different answer. Who's doing that in South Africa, I have a completely different answer. Who's doing that in Kenya, I have a completely different answer. Who's doing that in the United States? I have a completely different answer. Who's doing that in South America? Completely different answer. You know. But one thing I will say is this. The systems as they have been installed are completely and utterly favorable to, quote-unquote, the Western nations, which means Western Europe and the United States. The system of capitalism, in no shape, way, and form, factors in the empowerment and the growth of African, quote-unquote, Caribbean, any nations of black or brown people. That's the system that's in place right now. If you're asking about capitalism and racism, it completely exists in that. There, it completely exists. And there is no way to get any kind of balanced progress in any shape or form in any black or brown nation until that system is completely looked into and changed. Because when you look at the UN and all these institutions that came into play, all these institutions were erected when Africa was under colonialism and black people all over the place were in chains in some shape or form. And that includes even brown people in Asia and in Latin America. I hope that in some shape or form answers the question.
What is, you mentioned that celebrities such as Denzel Washington, I believe Beyonce, we all recognize the power that they have. What is their power?
Well, this is the one thing that I believe when you're in Africa and you see that, because you have to understand, in Africa we see two types of black people. We see Beyonce, we see Jay-Z, we see Denzel, and then we see all the black men being arrested, all the black women. Those are the two opposite views we see. We don't see in between. You don't see the doctors. You don't see the lawyers. All we see is the successful and the non-successful. But what I love about it is that when you go to Africa, the Africans gravitate positive images they see. More and more so, they're now gravitating to the positive images that they see of African Americans. And that, I think, is powerful, as opposed to the negative images that they see. Now, another thing that social media has done that is sad, but it's really opening people's eyes, is with Trayvon Martin, that spanned the globe in a way that what happens to black boys in America, has it's never spanned the globe and made it to Africa in the magnitude that Trayvon Martin's story did. And in a good way, it opened up the eyes of people in Africa to see what's actually going on in the United States when it comes to the state of black males and black females in America. That is something that has never happened before. And to the effect, to the sense, and that was so powerful because I heard a statement that I've never heard an African man utter even once. And that was, he was in shock. This was a black male, a black African man, who up until that point always had all these things he wanted to say, like these African Americans, that rhetoric. But when Trayvon Martin got shot, it's like a switch. Something was turned on in his head and he was like, wait a minute, something is wrong here. And I had him just stop after the news came out, and he said, these people just killed black men. And he just stopped. And I watched this. I mean, you had to be there. I watched this man shift and for once begin to understand something of the black experience in America. And that is powerful. It may seem like, you know, you guys see that every day, but for the Africans to actually see that, I think that was very, quite powerful. So the power of...
Oh, go ahead.
So the power of Denzel, the power of Will Smith, is that they counteract the negative narrative. They do. They counteract that. And, you know, people might say, but they're just entertainers. But let me tell you something. That's what America exports, entertainment. That's what they export. So even exporting the entertainment, they can show something or some sliver of, you know what, they're not all, black people are not all just prostitutes and drug dealers on the street corner. There's something to that.
You stated that that's what America exports. Who is America?
I mean, when I say America, I'm really just this country, you know.
Who is this country? I'm just trying to get some clarity. When you say this country, who is this country?
Son, I cannot answer that question for you because I don't know. I'm just talking about America as an entity, as what it is. I can't dwindle it down to a person or a thing or a man, because I don't know that. I don't have that information. And I never want to speak out of anything. I never want to speak or say anything that I'm not 100% sure about. But when I'm in Africa and I see some stuff sent my way that comes from the United States, because the African isn't thinking about, oh, that's this white entity. They're not looking at it like that. They're seeing that this is coming from America. It's coming from this country. That's all they're seeing.
Do you believe that this white entity is this country?
What white entity?
When you say this country,
yeah,
I'm just trying to get some clarity. Could you entertain a thought that this country could be white people?
There is a reason why I refuse to generalize, because it's the same generalization that I did with African Americans that put me in the position where now I had to make this movie. I really refuse to generalize anything anymore. So you can take it to mean what you want it to mean or whatever you believe that it means. But what I do know is that there is an exportation of culture that's happening. And with that culture is goods and services and whatever it is that wants to be sold. And there are people who play into that. There are people who see it and step away from it. And there are people who are oblivious and consume it.
Do you believe...
Hang on 1 second, because we had other folks who dialed in. I want to try and make sure we get everyone who called. The person, appreciate it, person who dialed in, last four digits, 3068, 3068. Did you have a question for Ms. Owina?
Good evening to Gus and your guest. I just have a question for your guest. Do you believe that various African countries, peoples, colluded and partnered with white people to enslave African Americans, black Americans here in the U.S.?
Colluded to enslave black Americans in the U.S.?
Yes,
you're talking about
the transatlantic slave
trade. The transatlantic slave trade.
That Africans, African countries, African leadership, what have you, partnered with and colluded with America to enslave us? How did we get here in this transatlantic slave trade, from your view?
Well, if you watch, okay, this is, I'm going to say what my view is and the general idea of the whole situation. I personally do not think that it was possible for, say, brand new people who've never been on the continent of Africa to go into the hinterlands or deep into the lands and extract Africans. So in some shape, way, or form, there have to have been some chiefs or some kingdoms that participated in getting people to the shorelines. That's my view. There are a lot of Africans who do not believe that. There are a lot of professors who do not believe that. But that's me. And I'm not saying everybody did that, because most of the people, because some of the situations that happened is that some people did go inland, grab people, kidnap people, steal people, fight wars, get people, bring them to the land, bring them to the line, and then they were sold. And then people, the same people who went and kidnapped, then them were kidnapped and then were put in the boat and sold.
Okay. So, well, I think there's more than enough evidence to corroborate what you said earlier, but that they did, and I call it a partnership. I know whenever our family members or what have you have done some inhumane things, we like to look at it with rose-colored glasses, and mm-hmm. we like to rewrite history. We like
yep.
to, I think, just look at white people. My, personally,
mm-hmm.
like I said, I think it's a partnership. And a couple of years ago, a few African officials from various nations went on mm-hmm. what I consider a very lame apology tour here
mm-hmm.
in the United States, apologizing for their role in
yes.
This horrific, inhumane treatment that we are still going through. Now, with that said, everyone is saying that America owes us reparations. I feel that America and those African nations owe us reparations. And just to your point about this, you're calling us siblings and so on and so forth. I just want to say, with that being the case of Africans partnering with white people to put us through this inhumanity that exists today, Mike Brown exists today because of the help that Africans partnering with white people back in the day participated in. I was molested by a family member. I want nothing to do with that family member. This kumbaya stuff that I feel like you're speaking with, out talking about the elephant in the room, not giving those African Americans who want nothing to do with Africans the right to feel this way, to say I want nothing to do with those nations, because, again, it has not ended. Africans are still coming to the United States and benefiting from affirmative action that was supposed to be set aside for African Americans. So I just want to make that said, because sometimes I feel like on the cows, and this is nothing against Gus, that there's too much of yes, I agree, and not enough disagreement and pushback. And I just wanted to push back and, as an African-American, say, you know, saying I don't want anything to do with the so-called motherland. The motherland wasn't motherly to us.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
And you have every right to do that. You have every right. But you also have to realize one thing. The motherland is huge. And not all African countries participated in the slave trade. The slave trade happened in one specific side of the coast and one other area. Not all the countries participated. So by generalizing, and this is the reason why I said generalizing can be a little bit dangerous, by generalizing and saying I don't want anything to do with everybody, then you are also saying you don't want anything to do with people who can come here to be an ally, who had nothing to do with that experience. But then again, that is your right.
Absolutely. And ally, please, in all of these 500 years, please give me some ally examples, because President Obama just got finished, I believe it was last month, speaking with various African leaderships and their children and all of that. And I don't believe that they reached out and said anything to African Americans. And I think that that has been the entire 500 years of us being over here. Our leaders going to the African nations and reaching out, but it's never reciprocated. Even with the cows, Gus reaches out to these various African people, giving doing interviews with them about what's going on the continent, but it's never reciprocated. I've wondered, have any of these African people reached out to Gus and say, I want to interview you about what the racism, white supremacy that's going on with the African Americans. It always seems like it is one-sided from whichever part of Africa they're from. I've worked with various Africans. I've gone to school with them, and they all have this attitude. You know, you were talking about what attitude we gave you, and it seems to be that immigrants coming in are the ones with the biggest attitude. With this, like you said earlier when you started off the interview, of thinking we're better, we're smarter, we work harder, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why we did Bound. Because when people come in here, one thing you do have to understand is, like I said, when Africans come to the United States, the only thing they know is Denzel, Jay-Z, and all that stuff, and cops. They have no understanding of the African-American experience. They don't have it. Nobody's showing them that. Nobody is showing them that. And that's one of the real reasons why, I mean, there was a tug and war in this, when we're making this documentary, and I insisted that we have to have the historical context. We have to put it in there, because on the continent, which is where we are hoping the documentary also ends up, and we know it's going to, that Africans do understand the experience, that they do understand the African-American experience, because to be honest with you, they don't. And the same happens here, but unless we understand each other's experiences, we don't know what we're walking into. We don't. You know, because when I'm in Africa, I don't really study American history. Being on the continent of Africa, the only history that we study is the history of Africa and Europe, but we never study American history. They don't. So when you take that extra leap and you study American history, then you begin to see images of the slave experience. Then you start digging deep into that. Remember even Steve McQueen, who directed 12 Years a Slave, he had no idea about all this stuff.
And that's exactly why, going back to what Gus asked you earlier, this is exactly why white people love immigrants. You said earlier about you don't understand this African, these hyphenated African-Americans, Asian-Americans. You said we don't do that in Africa. And that's the very reason why this country loves immigrant blacks, because you don't know, because you do have a different experience. That's with anything. People have different experiences, and you're coming in and you're telling us how we should respond, how we should act, how, you know, why you're doing this. You're confused, you're ignorant to this, that, and the other. But you're from a totally different experience. You're from a totally different culture. You're from a totally and if you really want this so-called sibling us getting together, at least understand that I don't know that what these people are experiencing, how they're acting is for a reason.
But ma'am, that's the reason why we did Bound. That's the reason why Dr. Joy DeGruy is in the movie.
It sounds like you're doing it. You're coming from a place of a put down. It's still in a refined way, like you're putting down African Americans. Even like what
in
Gus
the documentary.
What Gus said about the African American men not being attracted to you because you were from Africa. No, because all that we've been through in this country, where African Americans and on other groups of people have a problem with dark skin.
Yeah, but that's what we clarified. Did we not clarify that, Gus? That is because of being dark skin?
Gus had to bring that up to you, but prior to him,
because you have to understand that when I come here, I don't know you have a dark skin problem. It had to be clarified to me. It's in the documentary. We didn't know you had a dark skin problem. We just thought
people
are African.
But the point that I'm making is you're coming into a different culture. That should be something that you should know. Period. That I'm coming into a different culture, let me learn. Let me not just think that these people are ignorant and stupid. And mind you, again, it hasn't ended. We're not in post-racial whatever. What Africa
we get that.
Is still going on.
We understand that. I understand that.
Right on. Appreciate that. Call the other folks that dialed in. I want to make sure I give them an opportunity to hop on as well. The caller in Alabama, did you have a question for Ms. Owino? Your line should be open.
Yes, sir. I do. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to correct her statement saying that slavery only happened in one section of Africa. She is from Kenya, so I'm sure she's familiar with Mombasa, Kenya.
Yes, I said one section of Africa and a little coast.
No,
maybe
you
said missed that part.
Africa.
I said one section of Africa and a little coast, which was the coast of Kenya.
Which
is in the documentary.
The coast of Kenya.
Yes.
Okay. And now who were the people? Who were the white supremacists who colonized Kenya? Was it the wasn't it the English or was it the Belgians?
No, Kenya was colonized by the English.
Okay, now the English. All right, now, when Jomo Kenyatta and the Mau Mau, they beat the English tail and they, you know, made the English, you know, they brought a lot of attention to it and kind of made the English be like, hey, if it wasn't for Jomo Kenyatta and the Mau Mau, colonialism would not have ended at that time as fast as it would for Kenya. Is that correct or incorrect?
I think it began way before that. It all began with W.E.B. Du Bois, who started talking about the liberation of Africa. He was the first person to actually start the movement towards independence for Africa.
I'm talking then about who's on the ground in Kenya, though,
then,
who did some actual
then all those
stuff
guys, then, yeah. Then all those guys jumped on board. Jomo Kenyatta and Didin Kimathi, Tom Mboya, and all, yes.
Okay, okay. Now, colonialism ended for the Kenyans, and that was a good thing. And colonialism ended, you said what?
Has it really ended? But we, go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, well, according to you, I can only go with what you say. Let me say this. You just stated that the white people are not a problem in your country. It's like you making that clear with everybody online that and I come from a country where the blacks doing this and the blacks running this and there's so much black doing so good and we really don't have a problem with white people like y'all
doing
America.
Did I specifically say we don't have a problem with white people?
Yeah.
Or did you make an assumption that that's what I was meaning?
No, I didn't make no assumption. That's what you said. You said
I said
come
we have
from
no
a country.
With
where, hold up.
I said I come from an ethnocentric country, not a racial centric country. The biggest issues that happen in Africa, the biggest confrontations that happen in Africa, even to this very day, are really ethnic based. Am I saying that there is no power that be or all those people who are puppet masters? Uh-huh. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we as Africans have allowed ethnicity to be a tool that divides us, and it still divides us to this very day. But you also have to understand that those boundaries were not put together by Africans. And what is happening right now is the Africans trying to shake off those boundaries as best as we know how to create countries that really satisfy the needs of the individual. There's a lot of politics. I didn't want to go into a political situation and a political debate about what's actually going on in Africa and who's pulling the strings and all that stuff, because the strings are being pulled from all corners. I did mention China to some extent. And now there's a tug of war in Africa where China is now buying lakes in Africa. And we have African presidents who are selling lakes. How do you sell water? How do you sell the source of water? We have Tanzania that just is kicking off Maasai people from their tribal land. So they can sell
I understand that, but I only have a short time, so I wanted to get back to the question I was asking, because I wasn't just asking the question without no point. My question I was asking was, when you did make that statement, like, you know, hey, we really don't have to deal with white people like you do over here. You can be honest, dishonest, and say that when you that really was not what you was alluding to. But I think other callers, everybody on the line heard how you said it. And that's not a bad thing. Hey, if that's the case in Kenya, that's good for Kenya. And I understand that things are still not perfect. But to me, it's kind of condescending when you forget to realize that colonialism might have ended, like direct colonialism, let me say it like that. Direct colonialism might have ended in Kenya, but it didn't end, and it's not, we still under colonialism. That's why you was like when you was trying to get really, be really, in my opinion, and I know you're a victim of racism, I look at you as the same part of the team as I'm on. Believe that, we're in the same boat. But the thing is, like, the way you was being with the caller a couple calls ago who was asking about – I'm working doing two things at the same time. I'm trying to think what he was asking. He was asking you something, and you was like it was something about white people, and it was like we don't have – yeah, white supremacy and things of that nature. And it was like, you was like, well, we're not really dealing with just a white issue here in our country and stuff of that nature. And the thing is that he is, you know, like, we are still being colonialized. And I'm sorry I'm kind of being confusing right now, but like I said, I'm multitasking and I kind of got thrown off of my point. But, yeah, it's like, you know, when you speaking to him, somebody else like that, you're speaking to somebody who is still living under direct colonialism, kind of like which I was going through before the English left. That's how direct I was. That's what my point was. He was saying that you do not, he was asking you, do you recognize America as a white entity? And you was being very condescending towards him, trying to act like you had no idea what he was talking about, where he was coming from. You are acting like you don't understand that we are still being affected by direct. Not indirect, like you're talking about Kenya, because y'all have y'all own leaders, y'all own so-called not leaders, but you all have y'all heads of state. And the thing is, we are living under direct colonialism, and it has an end for the African Americans who were brought here in the Atlantic slave trade. It has not ended for the Native Americans who was over here and got colonized. And I think y'all are very numb to the pain of our direct colonialism.
Yeah.
But like I said, we're in the same boat, and I do not look at you as an enemy. I look at you as an ally. And I'm going to say one more thing and mute my line. When you say we need to look for other allies, remember all allies are temporary, and you get rid of them when they become, when they start not to be beneficial. You get rid of them when they're not beneficial any longer. But as an African American and you as an African, I think we will always be allies. We all come from the same boat. But when I'm talking about allies that you can get rid of, I'm talking about allies from other ethnic groups. But remember, like I said, we are still under direct colonialism, like the Australians, like other people. And I mute my line.
Appreciate that. Caller at 1-388-1-388.
Can I say something about this? There's a statement the lady made, and I wanted to say something that she said. I wanted to give her some information.
Right ahead.
Hello?
So we can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yes, because she said that she was talking about reparations from Africa, because there are countries like Benin and Ghana do have reparations, in which they have land that they've set aside for descendants of African Americans. If you go to Ghana and if you go to places like Benin, they actually have land that they have set aside. So there are countries in Africa that are offering reparations, just as an FYI.
Okay, right on. Appreciate that. The caller at 1-388-1-388, did you have a question for Ms. Owino? Your line should be open.
Good evening. I just want to kind of give a little pushback on the caller who was talking about reparations. I actually been to Africa. I've been to Senegal, Gambia, Togo, and Ghana. And she is correct. Those African countries do have things set up where they want African Americans to come over to the continent and build and try to create a bridge for African Americans to connect with their history. My question was to your guest was, has she thought about reaching out or doing something like that too, where she opened her home to, or your compound or something like that to African Americans to travel over to see the continent? Because I think that I got a different perspective on the continent when I went over there. I was kind of like in a culture shock, seeing nothing but millions of blacks in every position possible, and no white face. So I was kind of like in a culture shock in every country I went to. But my question is to her, have you thought about doing something like that? Because the call that, you know, kind of got a little bit heated to me about it, I think once you go over there and get the picture, you'll see the difference in the countries, and then you'll see that the media is the biggest thing that keeps us divided, because the American media shows us one thing of Africa, you know, kids, you know, hunger, flies flying around them, just see missionaries going over and doing little health issues. And then when I was over there, I saw the African, you know, media also too, in the way they depict the African Americans. And so the media puts us against one another. But once you visit the continent, and the same thing, once the immigrant come over to America, you'll see what the media is keeping from us. So I think that's my question is, Have you thought about doing something like that with your home or your country, making available for African Americans to come over and visit and see the continent?
Yeah, but on a personal, more so on a personal level, which is more so that I will travel with my friends who are African American. And with this, there's a thought we have been we've been kicking around. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but about possibly trying to see if we can, you know, this whole on the conversation of reparations, if we can figure out a way to elicit the government, the United States government, and the government of the Caribbean, because you know the whole argument of for the 40 acres and the mural. Okay, fine. If you're not going to give that, then at least be willing to pay for a round trip ticket and accommodation, hotel accommodation to every African American or people in the Caribbean areas on an African country of their choice, so that they can at least visit the continent and have that experience, you know. So we have been figuring out ways in which to implement something that is not just on an individual level, because we do understand that the biggest issue is finances, because those trips are not cheap. But to figure out a way that you can have the government's involved in actually funding it, so that it actually happens.
But I don't think you need the government to do it, because if you do it with the government, it'll become a travel and you have it become like a resort. You want to make it fun, and when you go over to study and get your history, it's not a vacation. I'm going over there to learn about what the media has kept me from picking up on. So, and you say there's a lot of expenses also, too. That's why I say open your home to them, because, you know, I spent about $4,000 to $5,000 to travel over there, and I stayed at least 6-8 weeks in each different country. But if I had someone who opened their house to me, that would cover most of the cost, because most of the cost is hotel and food. But if you just pay for a round trip ticket, and then I can just come live with you, and then I get the African experience through an African native who will show me the countryside, opposed to just being on a resort and, you know, on a coast. And that's because that's what you have over there. You have all those hotels, 4-star, 5-star hotels in Africa, and I couldn't believe it. You know, you wouldn't believe that you're in Africa at the hotels. You know, white sand beach, black sand beach, and you know you got, you know, jet skis out in the ocean, and you wouldn't think that you are in Ghana, you know.
Yep.
So, and the thing is, that's why I'm actually opening your home and not with the government involved. Just opening home and then letting them see the native land, and they'll get a better understanding. Because if you're sitting on a resort or in a hotel, you're not going to get a picture of it. You'll come back with the same, you know, being divided, just like you said with your movies, trying to be bound, you know, you'll get a better experience, and then I think you will find that connection, and then we won't have the distaste when you see an African come over, and then, you know, oh, they think they're better, or whatever case may be. We'll know what our situation is and how white supremacy has kept us down on both globally.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you.
So is that something you will look into to open your home
For sure.
Without government assistance?
No, for sure. Because one of the things is right now, because whenever I go home next, I always have a list of people who want to come with. Usually sometimes the thing that holds them back is the plane ticket or whatever. But all my friends, at least the people who are around me, know whenever they want to go, they have a place to stay. Because I'm Kenyan. I mean, I don't understand how anybody who knows who would go to Kenya and actually pay for a place to stay. That's ridiculous. You know?
Well, I have one last question, if I can.
Yeah.
Now, you said when you got here, you went to Los Angeles, and then you kind of distanced yourself from the black community because you couldn't find love interest, and you went to the white man. Now, your friend circle whites, or is your friend circle African American? That's what I'm trying to figure out, because I know a lot of white want to go back over and do some little missionary to come over and give some kids some, you know, malaria pills, and then they feel good about themselves and come back. Are African American friends that you have, are they interested in going over? Because, you know, I'm trying to figure out which one of your friends that you're opening your home to. Is it the white ones or the black ones? Because you said you distanced yourself from the black community early on based on your love interest.
Well, I have a dear good friend, Nick, who just went, but he went to South Africa. So,
South Africa.
He's African American. Because I have friends who are Africans, African Americans, white, and so far my African American friends that I have right here in the United States are more eager. Well, everybody's eager to go to Africa, but for them, I push them a little bit more because I really do look at Africa as their birthright. I really just do. So when I have African American friends who are interested in going to the continent, I push for them to go. Go see it. Whatever country you want to go, go see it. That is your birthright. I really do believe that. So I don't know about anybody who wants to go to Africa and deliver some medicine or some pills. I'm the last person you'd want to talk to because I don't like that stuff. I don't believe in that stuff. People going in there and dropping their religions and their whatever medicines they want to take to Africa, that's enough. I think they should just leave Africa alone. It's going to figure itself out.
But you didn't ask my question.
Missionaries and all that nonsense. NGOs.
You still didn't ask my question about what friends came to Kenya, whether they're white friends or whether they're African American friends that you open your home to.
I've been so far, just because also for me, money was an issue at some point. I have been to Kenya so far since I've been to Kenya once. And
your
I'll
friend.
Have to go. I know. I've not gone, none of my friends have gone to Kenya with me yet. But they were all African Americans. They weren't white. That one.
They're all white.
No, they were African Americans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be my line.
Appreciate that. Lashes, did you have a question for Miss Owino? You might have to give me a moment to get your line here. Okie doke. I think. I gotcha. Lashes, if you had a question for what is going on. Okay. Your line should be open. Go right ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I just want to have a quick question for your guests. Have you ever thought possibly that racism, white supremacy is white culture, whether they're from the United States or from Europe?
Oh yeah, that's when I spoke about what Hollywood exports is it exports its culture, which is what's going on around the world right now. It's permeating the whole planet. We're all going to be Americans or Europeans or whatever. So
okay, I wasn't too clear that that's what you were insinuating. So I just want to ask that question.
Oh, because yeah, it's everywhere you go. It's everywhere, and that's why I talk about what every single time we are too busy studying other people's stories and other people's histories, we don't even know what our own story is, because this thing, it's everywhere. Everywhere you go, if I have to watch, what is this? If I have to watch documentaries about the Queen of England one more time, it's insanity. It's insanity. That's just my take on it. I just think it's pervasive. It's everywhere. It's in Africa. It's in the Caribbean. I don't know if it's in the Caribbean, but for sure it's in Africa. It's this studying of the other story of whether it's Europe or it's not Asia, but it's really European. It's in Africa. It's deeply entrenched in European history. But now I know, for me in Kenya, one of the things that they did insist on was to study African history, because as you're growing up, it was just too much. You're learning so much about people and places that don't factor in, but maybe I guess they do, subconsciously, into your life. And I really had a big problem with that. The fact that I did not understand, I did not know that slavery existed on the continent of Africa until I reached the, what grade was that? The ninth grade. No, the tenth grade is when I'm seeing the first images of this, and I'm like, what is this? You know, but all through that time, it's all the queen this, the queen that, and that happened throughout colonialism. So that when you see Africans right now, we have this. We are in this space where everybody wants to be more civilized than the queen. That's a different conversation in and of itself. But you know.
And how is the Chinese effect playing out currently in terms of are they pushing their cultural norms on a given African nation at this time, like the Europeans have, or like how the Arabs have? During the Indian Ocean slave trade, which preceded the Atlantic Ocean slave trade, how is the Chinese factoring in all this?
The Chinese, if you speak to Africans in general, I think they're more scared of the Chinese. Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I think there's a little bit more fear of the Chinese than others. But they're new. They're new to the game. So we are seeing they come into Africa and they'll build all the roads. They'll do all the stuff. They'll build the roads. But what they'll do is they will use Chinese labor. So not only are they building the roads, but they'll bring people from China to build the actual roads. And what is happening in Kenya right now is you have all these men coming in from China because, you know, the population in China is so skewed. There are more men than women. And now you have this interaction that's happening with African women and Chinese men, and they're giving birth to all these, you know, African Chinese babies. And then they're also buying, they're buying African resources. They're buying land. They're buying lakes. They're being sold. They're being sold lakes. So my the reason why for me it's so difficult for me to dwindle this down to race is because my own people are selling these things away, just like Africans sold Africans that were then enslaved. It's almost like it's the same mentality. It's how do you sell the birthright of your own people? But that's what's going on in Africa right now. It's ridiculous. And when you think about Kenya and all these bombs that are exploding in Mombasa and all that stuff, it's the whole, the fundamentalist is, and I don't want to say Muslim because it's not Islam. There's this thing that's also seeping into Africa that is the Boko Haram and the Al-Shabaab, and it's just this, it's all just, it's sad. It's sad, but it's also a disconnect to who we are and who we are, because it's all these things that have been allowed to permeate into the African culture, and it's slowly eating it up from the inside out.
You brought up the Chinese man and the African woman liaison. How is your country, Kenya in particular, dealing with these offspring from those two liaisons? And two, are the Chinese men acquiring land vis-a-vis the coupling with the African female to produce offspring that is the mother is African female and the father is Chinese male?
Now, here's the thing about African culture, and I don't want to speak for all African cultures because I don't know about all of them, but I do know about specific ones in Kenya. When a child is born, the child is automatically, and this is really old African culture, the child is automatically attributed to the father and the father's people, which means if you have a child with an African woman and let's say you are Chinese, the African government says that child belongs in China, which means the child can't necessarily inherit land because he's considered Chinese. So if he's to inherit land, he's going to inherit land in China, not in Africa. Does that?
No, I follow. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it becomes that's one of theirs, and so that's usually how you know the African said, oh, that's theirs. He's not ours. He's theirs, which means if push comes to shove, and it was like a land issue, they'd be like, no, you inherit from your father, and since your father does not own land here, you go and own land wherever it is your father owns land, basically.
The reason why I posed that question because throughout other parts of the world where it has been the black male, I mean, the black female and the white male, male has always been able to acquire land in a given country where that black female is from through that liaison. So that's why I posed that question. And I only posed that question due to the fact that it happened in countries that were once either colonized by the British, French, Dutch, Portuguese, Spain, whoever. So that's why I posed that question.
That always depends on the rules of the specific lands. Like if the, for example, in some African countries, the woman can't inherit land. So if she cannot inherit land, even if you marry her, you don't get the traditional land. It always goes to the male in the family.
Okay.
Some places are like that, yeah.
How is these African Asian offspring functioning in Kenyan society as we speak, and just, you know, how are they dealing with this issue?
You know, I don't have the answer to that, but I do, I have read some information about that, because it is causing a little bit of a disruption, mostly because most of these children that are being born out of wedlock. And so because it had been causing some sort of financial strain on the government, now they have instilled some laws that if you do impregnate an African woman, you are going to pay child support whether you're married to her or not. So that okay. aspect has come into play. But that's really as much as I know about it. I haven't really followed it extensively.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Let's see if we can nab our last two folks who dialed in. The caller at 1184. 1184, did you have a question for Ms. Owino?
Yeah, I had a how you doing, Ms. Owino?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
I had a couple quick questions that only need almost like a yes or no to, like,
mm-hmm.
basically. It shouldn't be long. In terms of, like, the pyramids, who do you think built the pyramids?
How was that a yes or no question?
No, let me tell you something. No, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. I do not understand how you can have pyramids on the continent of Africa and then turn around and tell me that Africans did not build them, and then turn around and then tell me that they were built by aliens. I think that's a whole bunch of nonsense. If the pyramids exist on the continent of Africa, to me, 1 + 1 = 2. They were put there by Africans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. That's understandable. Do you have a concept of how Africans became somehow unsure or not possessing a conviction towards a record of who did it? Do you
yes.
have an idea of that?
Yes. Like I said, let me tell you something. Dr. Karanga said it the best. The history of Africa that we read in our books is not the history of Africa. It's the history of the European in Africa. So, Africans have been besides the hieroglyphics and that, and when we do study extensively the history of, there's so much about our history that's lost, that was destroyed, that we have lost points of connection with things that are actually part of our stories. I mean, once you watch the Ten Commandments, if you've never heard, because Africa is a big place first and foremost, so we're not the people in Kenya don't necessarily have the story of the history of Egypt or the history of South Africa. Africa is huge. So just dealing with the history of Kenya alone is extensive. So the Kenyan will not necessarily deal with the history of Egypt, and you will not know the history of Nigeria. It's just like asking the French person to know the history of Ukraine. They won't know it because that's so far away. And so if I am living in Kenya, and I am studying Kenyan history, and I have not gotten into Egyptology and the study of Egypt yet, and the first thing I see is the Ten Commandments. Guess what? You already skewed my idea of who exactly built the dang pyramid. So then it becomes this confrontation of, well, who was it? Well, it was the Africans. Well, no, it wasn't. Then you get caught in this struggle to claim the doggone pyramids. You know, and I did that. I fought that.
I understand that line of reasoning. But when you say, like, what disrupted the heritage of knowing, like what group still has that record, so to speak, clearly
mm-hmm.
about the pyramids in Africa? For example, in Egypt, like, it's, mm-hmm. Egypt is not ruled by presumably the people who were Egyptians originally.
No.
Is that true?
Yeah.
And then if you look at the Nubians, like, do they have a clear consciousness about what took place in Egypt back then?
Do the Nubians have, by Nubians, are you talking about? I'm sorry, who do you mean by Nubians? I'm sorry. Are you talking about just everybody in the continent?
In Egypt, there's a group concerned.
Yeah, there's a group called the Nubians, yeah.
Right, and that would be like the roots or the trace evidence
yeah.
of the original type of Egyptians, right?
Yes. And the thing about it also is they have been so marginalized that I don't even know what the Nubians believe, because half the time you can't even finding one to just ask them the question
And that's the whole point of the accessibility of information. Is,
can I ask you what your religion is?
Me?
Yes.
I am desperately trying to figure my way back to what my people believed.
Okay. Did you start off as a Christian?
I started off as a Catholic. Then I went into Protestantism. Then I went to Sufism. And then I just said enough. And now, yeah.
Is like, because that's one thing that perplexes me sometimes. Is like the way Christianity is presented, the way we black people have seen received Christianity, because a lot of times people say Christianity, we can't trust that because they presented Christianity as Jesus was white. But if you ever look at a Bible movie, everybody that ever did anything was white. You know what I mean? It ain't just Jesus.
Yeah.
Every prophet, all of it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What do you think of that concept? Like,
this is
the white person's phenotype is supposedly the author of everything that means anything when it comes to enlightenment. And
well,
they're not even genetically the original people.
Well, here's the thing, and I do have to say this, because we did have the element of dealing with religion in the documentary, and we just didn't have enough space for it. That was one place that's one area that I really wanted to go to, because I believe that that is one of the fundamental issues that is really destructive, in my opinion.
It is.
Because the moment you begin to see the Savior as being something other than somebody who doesn't look like you but looks like as the man next door, then from him comes your salvation. And then you will no longer trust the black man or the brown man to be able to help, because he doesn't look like the Jesus you've been shown all your life. And but the whole idea of the – first of all, when biology Kwedu Obeng, who's also in the documentary, makes a very good statement. He says that even if you look at biology as anthropology and all that stuff, it speaks about life beginning in sub-Saharan Africa. A black woman in sub-Saharan Africa is the source of all things humanity-based. And that goes way back to millions and millions of years. But then if you look at the book, at the Bible, as it's written, which is like, how old is the Bible? 2,000 years old. It says that black people emerged from the womb of Noah's offspring, which makes us a footnote in white history, which is contradictory to archaeology. It makes no sense.
Reality.
It makes no sense to reality. But then here's the place where then we as people of African descent, let's put that thinking cap down, and I put, you know, just literally just reason with the information before us. And I asked a friend of mine, when you open the book of Genesis and you open the book of Matthew, what's the first thing you see? First, in the beginning, it's all Jewish ancestry. It's Jewish ancestry listed. Every beginning book of the Old Testament and the New Testament lists Jewish ancestry. Look at, and I can only say this because I've been a minister for 3 years. So it has Jewish ancestry. So basically, when we're walking around listing all these people, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we are extending the life of Jewish ancestry and completely ignoring our own. Where are our ancestors? Who's calling on them? We are not doing that. We are calling Jewish ancestors every day when we go into the church, and we call on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's Jewish ancestry. It's not ours. You know, now you can do that if you believe that's your calling. But I believe, you know, let them, the Jews, more part of them, they can call on their own ancestors, and they do that. They do that every day when they go to the synagogue. They do that every day. But who's calling out our ancestors? Do we even know what their names are?
But they don't have any, they're not clear on that. They don't have a clearness on their own documents that's being presented, because...
Well, they stole that stuff. The Jews still exist, and the Jews have their Torah, and they call out their own ancestors. The Jews have nothing to do with the Holy Bible.
that's something that some folks in Rome sat down together and said, hey, Niacin, hey, and it's also called the King James Bible. Come on. It's named after a king.
They got the Proverbs of Ammon Mobile, something to that effect, right? Ammon Mobile, something to that effect.
Yeah.
From Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
The Book of Proverbs. It was already a model of that already.
Obviously, yeah, all the things, you can trace them back.
All of that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But even then, I'm not even trying to, I'm not even trying to get into a reputation about Jewish people thing or black people mm-hmm. thing. The more serious question that I probably really want to ask you is, like, what is it about white people in your view, what is it about white people, Europeans, whatever you want to call them, that what did they have that was so influential to turn Africa upside down? Do you think about that? And
the gun?
What is your view on that?
The gun?
The gun? Okay, now where does the gun come from? It comes from my idea, thinking, right? And I'm not.
Yeah, but it's like, but the gunpowder came. Yeah, but the gunpowder came from China.
Chinese, right?
Yeah.
So something inherently disagreeable in them that is adverse to us. Then, you know what I mean? Because I think you're saying it's not even intelligence. It's just what they did. You know what I mean?
You know, when I think
what they
of
did. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how all of these African chiefs and kings mm-hmm. and all of these organizations on that huge mm-hmm. continent,
mm-hmm.
how could they be turned upside down by these people like that? There's something about them.
Because even if you look at colonialism. I was talking to a gentleman a couple of days ago, and he's American, and I was talking to him about colonialism and the African experience, and I asked him, "Are you familiar with colonialism?" And he said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "How could you not be familiar with colonialism?" I said, "You're living on a colony."
Right.
I mean, if you ask the Native American, they're colonized. This is a colony. And so what happened to America was the intention for Africa, except Africa is three times as big as the United States, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't easy to wipe out
mm-hmm.
the Africans as it was, you know, to eradicate.
Right, and they came
Native Americans
as well as other places, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I wish I had the answer to that question.
I know, it's perplexing, totally. Thank you.
Appreciate that, 1184. The person that dialed in, last four digits, 4300. Did you have a question for Miss Owino?
Yes. Hi, good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening to the guest. Good evening to the host. Quick question. How long did it take to develop your film?
We shot it in the span of, it took us 3 years.
3 years, okay.
Yes.
What was the general conclusion that the participants in the film drew about each other? Were there any bonds that were formed between the Black Africans and the Black Americans as a result?
Yes. I got a phone call actually after we finished filming about 2 months later, and one of the young women was like, "Could you take my part out of the movie?" And I asked her why, and she said, "Because after doing that, I've had a 180, but now I'm more apt to empathize and to stop myself from drawing a conclusion than I was early on." And
was this a Black African or was
yeah,
this
that's
a black?
That's an African, an
okay.
African woman, yeah, And half of this, I think what really helped was just, I think sometimes we just need to be, because you know how black people are. I mean, I know it's Africans and African Americans, but at our core, we have some similarities. Sometimes we just need to be in the room together and just rage. And then we find our way over that. because one thing that I found that was quite extremely similar about Black people is the importance of relationships, about bonds that actually matter. And we're not very flighty. We are not very, we want bonds that are meaningful. And those bonds sometimes require us to rage with one another, to be honest about where we are at and what we are feeling. And once we do that and make space for that, we find our way to each other. So I do believe, because, you know, I didn't know most of the people who were in the documentary, but, you know, I talk to them now, you know. But you also have to understand that I was not my isolation with the African-American community stopped when I started doing the documentary. Actually, it stopped a little bit sooner than that when I started making a conscious effort to engage myself in my own in the community. And that's the reason why I actually made the documentary, was to try and bring other people along with me in this place that I was in before I came to the United States. And then somehow just got disconnected from it again. So
what I find interesting is that I think one of the major commonalities that Black Americans, Black Africans, and even Black Caribbeans, and I'm speaking as a Black Caribbean, my parents, my family is from the Caribbean, is that the media does all of us a great and grave injustice. So when we see Africans portrayed on television here in America, it's all negative. AIDS, hunger, Ebola, and I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, I'm sure, in Africa. I mean, granted, you have the representation of entertainers and sports players, but for the most part, I mean, as you mentioned before, you know, in Africa, it really hit you guys hard, the whole Trayvon Martin situation. So, I mean, I think that that's a great commonality that we do have, and that's something that we, I think if we acknowledge that and we have a better grasp of that, I think that can definitely work on building our bonds. Also, may I ask why you and your white husband divorced?
It's too, I don't even want to get into that right now. We can just gloss over that. It was very personal.
Can I just ask this? Did it have anything to do with racism?
Nope.
Okay. Another question I wanted to ask is that during the conversation, the discussion, you mentioned that the point of Black folks in America, such as W.E.B. Du Bois, they had worked to attempt to liberate Africa and liberate Black people in America and pretty much go back to Africa. But you mentioned that African people have no knowledge of African Blacks other than what has been portrayed in the media. So I guess with that, how did you become knowledgeable about Black Americans' desire to liberate Black people globally?
Happened to me was you have to love history to start, because for me, my first inclination or even the first image that I ever saw of anybody enslaved, I was in the 10th grade. And it was part of history. It was our history book in high school, and it was half a page. And one half of that page was the picture, and the other half was just a little blurb about that. That was it. Just Africans were taken, put in ships, went to America. Doesn't even go with, okay, what happened once they got there? Does not include that at all. It's just, that was it. And so I got asphyxiated personally. I have a little OCD on that image, and then I took the liberty to start reading about Frederick Douglass, and then I read the slave narrative, and that's how I began to become aware of what actually happened, because I was like, this picture is not enough. There is a story behind this, but not everybody is going to do that. Not everybody thinks to do that, because one thing we're doing is we're reading to retain information so we can pass a test.
Nobody is reading to say, oh, this is interesting, let me follow through, you know what I mean? So you have that going on. And that's from, I'm from Kenya, so I can only speak about the history book in Kenya. I don't know what they're studying in South Africa. I don't know what they're studying in Nigeria or Cameroon or Congo. I don't know. I can only speak about what I read in my Kenyan history book. And that's the history of Africa. And that was that little blurb.
Okay, my very, very last question. In regard to the global system of racism, white supremacy,
yeah.
What about the fact that the white minority rule over the black African majority in pretty much everywhere they are on the continent? Isn't that evidence pretty much that racism does exist and that it's the subordination of the people? It isn't exclusive to the people that look just like you. Because he had mentioned that, you know, you don't necessarily see it from a racial standpoint. You see it from the fact that people that look just like you, they're the ones that are subordinating people. But, I mean, we here in America, and I know you on the continent, we have the evidence. We see the evidence all the time of, you know, about the history of apartheid. You know, about the farmers in Zimbabwe under President Mugabe. And anyway,
yeah.
I have my own opinions about President
okay.
Mugabe. I really appreciate the fact that he actually reclaimed the land and distributed it back to the black Africans.
Yeah.
So I think that that's pretty good evidence. I mean, pretty much we know that everywhere these people go, they just have that mentality of just colonizing wherever. They take over wherever they go. So what I'm saying is that that's pretty good evidence that the minority rules over the black majority. And so,
yeah.
I mean, can contribute a lot of why the black Africans maybe rule with an iron fist, no pun intended, to just being programmed. I mean, we live in a global system. A lot of the things that we do, the way we think, it is according to white people. We think, I mean, how we educate ourselves, everything that we do, as the previous call, I believe it was Lashes, had mentioned before, that would you say that white culture is white supremacy? And, I mean, we are engulfed in all of that. The way we think, the way we talk, everything that we do, is pretty much according to how white people do it and how white people say this is the right way, the civilized way, the quote-unquote civilized way to do it. So, I mean,
okay. So let me, I feel the need to clarify something because now I've had three callers mention it and I think that they must, I need to clarify this. First, I said that in Africa we are ethnocentric people, which means that for us ethnicity is more a cause of division than racial centric. And the reason why I made that statement is because to explain why when Africans come to America, they don't necessarily spot racism when it happens, like people following you in a store, because they don't identify with a race being an issue. They identify with ethnicity causing issue, because where I come from, I'm a Luo. And in my city of Nairobi, because I'm a Luo, it's hard for me to get a job because I'm the wrong ethnic group. Yeah, so that's the reason why I say that for us, our default is ethnicity and not race. Now, that being said, I will also say this. The reason why, for me, also as an African, racism exists, but the reason why it's hard for me, and I'll get to the answer to your question, to just say it's white racism, is because now I'm seeing China do it. So in Africa, it's everybody but the African. And in some cases, it's even the African president who then adds ethnicity into it. So when I speak, I don't just speak as a black African woman. I'm speaking as a black African Luo woman from Kenya, where I have seen myself oppressed by everybody, including people who look like me. So for me, oppression doesn't just fall into one race. It falls into whites, it falls into Chinese, it falls into Kikuyu. It's so many different layers. Now, when it comes to oppression of people of African descent, my father said it best, because one of the other reasons we did this documentary was because I became tired of looking around the world. In every place where I saw people of color, we were at the bottom of the totem pole, or at the top, however it is that phrase goes. We will be oppressed. I don't care whether you go to Brazil, whether you go to Africa, whether you go to the Caribbean. Black people are in abject poverty everywhere we go. And for me, I believe that that is because the systems that are in place, whether it's by Europe and white people, China and its people, have systematically oppressed black people. But my dad put it best when he said, why is it that everywhere I go, black people are always struggling? And he stopped himself and he answered his own question. And he said, it's because we are always following. The day we start to lead, we will never be behind. And so we are, as black people, always following whoever it is. In Africa now, they're following China, you know, because why is it that African nations have not reached out to African Americans, whether they are in the Caribbean or African Americans in the United States or in the Caribbean? Why haven't they reached out to people who own businesses over there to figure out how to get clean water? We have African Americans who work in the water department. They know how to deal with water sanitation. Why do we have to go to China for that? You know, we've had African Americans that made it all the way up to the White House. But yet we're looking for our counsel and people to invest. We're looking at Asia and Europe. Why aren't we going to our own? And for me, it always goes back to, we always see that other people have the answer and not that we have the answers ourselves. Because if I do something right now as an African in Africa, they will pat me on the back and say, well done, well done, well done. But the moment I do the same thing in Europe, and then white people say, yeah, you're the best, then our Africans are lifting you even higher. So for me, it's not just someone just an issue of white supremacy or whatever it is we want to call it, but there's also something that we as black people need to really take a look at as why it is that we always think they have the answer. Why can't we have the answer for a change? Because we have the answers. We've always had the answers. If Africans were so confused if Africans were so violent, there'd be no white people in America, because all those who came over would have killed them all. If black people were so violent, there'd be nobody on the continent of Africa, because we'd have killed each other off. If black people were so confused and retarded, humanity would not exist, because we would never have made it through the first group of people. So we have the answers. And my hope in doing Bound was to get black people together and be like, look, let's shut everybody out and for a split second, let's just look at each other for the solutions, because we have them. If we can just silence everyone else, we can figure us out. And then we can literally take control and just steer this thing right. Because right now, I feel like we're all going to hell in a handbasket. That's just my take on that. Yeah.
I agree. Can you agree that we devalue ourselves? I was asking, can you agree that we devalue ourselves? And I think that's a global phenomenon.
Yes.
We devalue ourselves. Okay. And with that, can you also agree that that is a learned behavior?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. Thank
you. 100%. Yeah. 100% learned behavior.
Thank you very much for answering my question.
Thank you.
Folks are enjoying the dialogue. Did you have time for me to check the two other folks that dialed in? Ms. Owino, did you have time for me to check?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay. Great. The person at 0586, last four digits, 0586, did you have a question for Ms. Owino?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. Hi, Ms. Owino. Thank you. First, I wanted to say thank you for your encouraging words, the commentary you made about African Americans and the contributions we've made to music and culture and how it's well received overseas and especially in Africa. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And there's more, I know. There's more, but I'm just telling you what the Africans know. Nobody tells us about the other traffic lights. Nobody tells us about Dr. Ben Carson, cardiothoracic surgeon. Nobody tells us that. Yeah.
Right. And in turn, I as a native-born African-American, I myself have been to Africa. Unfortunately, I've only been to West Africa. I haven't been to East Africa, where Kenya is, but hopefully I'll get there someday.
But I had really three quick questions. My first question is, given that I live in a D.C. area, and I'm sure you're aware that there's a large population of Ethiopians here and a large population of Nigerians, as well as, I'm sure, Kenyans as well. But I wanted to know if they're and those groups do very well financially. They're business owners, et cetera. But I wanted to know if, as an African who's, you know, lived in America for the number of years that you have you experienced or observed any intra-group rivalries or divisions, you know, amongst Africans that settle in America? I mean, is there like talk of a hierarchy of who does better or I have more than you, et cetera?
Not necessarily. No, actually, I don't, because usually Africans tend to cluster a lot. Because you will go to a place and you'll just find Kenyans there, and the Kenyans really hang out with Kenyans, and the Nigerians hang out with Nigerians, and mostly because people are, like I said again, people are very ethnocentric in Africa. So ethnicity is such a big issue. Like, you will see a bunch of Nigerians hanging out, then you might even see the Igbos are together, and you'll see, like, with Kenyans. It's not going to be like, they won't say, oh, that's a Kenyan party. Somebody who doesn't know will say, oh, I'm going to a Kenyan party. But Kenyans will say that's a Kisi party, which means it's not just Kenyans, it's a specific group of Kenyans. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what you see. So ethnicity is really huge in Africa because that's just because when you go to a Kisi party, everybody there is speaking Kisi. So me as a Luo would be, nobody's going to accommodate me. So it's like, why am I going there? I don't understand the language. And so those are the things that you see more in play. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then the second quick question is, I understand there's a very negative term that, I don't know if it's solely attributed to Nigerians, but I've heard of many Nigerians referring to native-born African-Americans as akata, meaning cotton pickers derogatorily. And I'm wondering if you've heard that term used and if there are other such terms that are used derogatorily against African-Americans.
That's the only one I know. That's the only one I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the only one I know. I've not heard any other group or any other country come up with a name. Never heard it. That's the first one I've ever heard, and I didn't know what it was, and someone had to explain it to me. Because, you know, I'm from Kenya. I don't, I think it's either an Igbo or a Yoruba word. I'm not sure what it is.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then my last question is, you mentioned that they're Maasai, I think you mentioned, in Tanzania, who are being displaced.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know, so where are these groups of people being forced to, and what do they end up doing, and how do they fare financially or economically in the end?
Well, the Maasai are nomadic people, but they have lands that, you know, it's ancestral land. So I know right now there's a petition going out from I'm not sure the last time I signed it was in the millions when I saw it and signed it. And it was just something that came out, and this is just sending ancestral lands to the Prince of Dubai so he can make it into a natural reserve so he can go hunting. I tell you, this is the nonsense that happens in Africa. This kind of nonsense. How are you selling a lake? I mean, it's the frustration, and we always, in Africa, we have this phrase, which you call it ukoloni, which means colonialism in the brain, which means you will sell out your own for a few trinkets. What's the difference between this and the selling off of Africans for trinkets? So there's a chief in West Africa who sold 200 Africans for a freaking umbrella during the slave trade. I mean, what is this now? I get very emotional about that stuff because at some point it's got to stop. It has got to stop. We can't survive as a people if we're selling off the continent bits and pieces. We're losing our birthright. What's going on here?
Absolutely.
You know?
And okay. Well, thank you, and I appreciate your contribution with the film.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Right on. The other caller, the last person that had dialed in with a hand up, I don't know if they got disconnected, but if you hadn't shared, if you had a quick question you wanted to get in, you should get your hand up before we wrap things up. Really, I guess, number one, I think this was a part of your goal with the film. I looked at some of the footage because they have footage where people were commenting after they'd seen the film at different screenings. Yes. You even did a screening here at a Seattle high school. Yes. Where they had African-Americans and children who, they were African. Their parents, they might have been going to school here, but their parents were from the continent, and they watched the film, and you were saying that this is the kind of dialogue you wanted, even if it was contentious, people were getting upset or pulling out. This is exactly what you wanted because you felt it was important to kind of get all of this out on the table and examine where all of this is coming from. So this is kind of what you've seen throughout as you've done screenings for the film. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is, and I think I keep insisting how important it is to get the historical experience out there, because that that to me was the most important thing, was that for the kids who are coming here, whether they're Africans born here or Africans born on the continent or whatever, who are first generation born here or Africans who are coming from the continent to the United States, I felt it was really, really important for them to understand historically what the journey was for the Africans who came in and enslaved, and what the African-American experience has been, as best as we could do it, as best as you could summarize it in 15 minutes. It's as best so that you understand, like I believe, on whose shoulders you stand upon, like that you understand, that in some shape, way, or form, you get to stop judging and generalizing for one split second and ask yourself a question, or sit down with that person and ask a question, to kind of lean in as opposed to pull, you know, as opposed to push yourself out. And I also did want the African-American audience to understand where the African is coming from, because the African has been colonized, and some of us are trying and doing our best to decolonize the brain, which I think is super important, is to remove the chains on both the African-American, whatever those chains were put in there, that change how we see ourselves, because we've never seen ourselves the way we are seen now. You know, the concept of, you know, the Congo, where now African women are just being raped willy-nilly, that's a brand new. That's a brand new thing. But where did they learn how to do that? That's brand new. So that we can look back at the experiences and say, okay, this happened. How do we figure our way out of this? We don't have to do it together, but I hope we do. I think we're stronger if we do, but that's everybody's individual choice.
Right. What's the distribution going to be on the film for folks who haven't seen it, who want to check this out? Are they going to be able to catch it on Netflix, or what's the distribution going to be?
Well, we're looking to do definitely, I don't know, are we doing Netflix? I know we're doing iTunes, Google Play, and one of the reasons why we choose Google was because we wanted it in a place where everybody has access to it. And Google is everywhere. Netflix is only in the United States and Europe. iTunes is only, I don't know if iTunes is in Africa, but I know Google is in Africa, and it was really important to me to get this to where Africans will see it, so that when they get on the plane and come here, they have some sort of an understanding. They're already more willing to lean in, you know what I mean, as opposed to they're just coming blind. And then I just really wanted to get this into the hands of African people. So we're looking at Google Play and iTunes for now, that I know for sure. And this is going to be in February of 2015. Everything going, fingers crossed, everything goes well. We should have it ready by then. Yeah.
February 2015, Google Play, iTunes, not sure about Netflix, but minimum.
Not sure about
Google
Netflix
Play.
Yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted everybody to have, you know, not everybody has Netflix, and you know, but we wanted everybody to be able to watch it wherever they are, on their phones, and, you know, wherever.
Got it. Is this going to be available for DVD? Like, folks want to get a copy or what have you?
I'm not sure about DVD yet. The Isaiah's team is really handling that distribution element of it, but right now I know it was iTunes and Google Play.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Was there any? Did you have any special connection with Seattle? Because I know you hit the International Film Festival here and the high school screening. Was there any reason or any connection to this area?
No, I don't. You know, they approached me when they heard, when it was announced on Shadow and Act that this documentary was being made. And one reason why we did say that we were going to go to Seattle was because when they accepted the film, the first thing they said was they wanted to screen it for the Black community first, and that was really important to me that they understood that it was most important for us to first get the sort of the blessing of the Black community and say okay before just tossing it into, you know, into the public. And so that is the thing that for me was like, okay, as long as they understand the reason behind this film. Because when we were making it, I mean, a lot of people came to me and were suggesting changing the title. And they said, you have to change the title because this just sounds like a movie for Black people. And I had to say, what is wrong with making a movie for Black people? I mean, Lord of the Rings doesn't have a single Black face in it. It's a movie for white people, but Black people go to watch it. So what's this nonsense? And so I specifically kept it. We specifically kept it the way it is. But it was very obvious that this is for us.
Right. God forbid Black people make something for us. Wow.
And one of the things that people will realize about the movie, those who haven't seen it, is it's really about us people of the continent, wherever it is we are, sitting down and talking to us. It's not about figuring out how Brad or Matt or whoever can solve this. It's about me and you. Brother, sister, we got a problem. How do we fix this? Anybody walks into the room, I'm sorry. This is the drum section. The drum section is trying to figure itself out. We'll join the orchestra in a minute. Let the drum section figure itself out. That's really it. It's just me and you. That was really important to me, that it was just Black folk talking to Black folk. That's it. You know, we deal with white people in the context of what happened throughout history, but right now, it's just me and you.
Definitely appreciate. I'm sorry, did you have?
No, and I think, and I do believe that that's important, and people might think I'm being too hopeful, but I think that it is really important for us to start to change the rhetoric around who we are. And it only changes when we focus the attention. Because that's something we don't do. We need to start focusing the attention on us and how we can solve our problem. And not sitting in Africa thinking about why isn't America bringing me for an aid. No. You're able to do this. You know.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Get my last question before we allow you to enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yes.
Just you had said, I guess when you have like a census form or some sort of application where you might have to fill out classification, racial classification, that you'll check African-American. I wanted to make sure we got your response. What would you say to folks who would say, well, you're not an African-American. Your film, it's Africans versus African-Americans. You are an African immigrant to this country. You're not an African-American, and that is another way that the system of racism works, to have someone like you, yes, you're Black, but you're not an African-American, to have you end up being the representative for African-Americans when that's not exactly accurate. You're not born here. You were born in Kenya. What would your response be to someone who says, hey, that's not accurate. You should not be classifying yourself as an African-American?
That's a good question. So this is like the form just has African American, Black, or is just the form just has African American and you check African American?
Well, if it
there's some cases when I've checked other.
Right, they would say either check other, where you can put in that you're African, so that they, you know, if you still want to make sure you're being accurate about it, but just if you're checking African American, that it's not accurate.
You know,
number one.
You know, they don't really the forms that are coming. To be honest with you, the forms that I've actually looked at don't usually have African American. They usually say it's Black/African. You do know that they do that now.
Yes, I have seen some of the forms like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I've seen. The one that says slash. It says Black, and then it is in parentheses, it says African. It's weird. But it's been a long time since I've seen a form like that. It's been a long time since I've seen a form, since I've even had to sign a form that actually has that on it. You know. Yeah. And the last one I remember seeing said black, and it had in brackets African American. It said African descent. Something weird. They're getting slick.
For sure.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you just do. Sometimes I do other. Usually I choose not to answer because you can choose not to.
Mm.
Yeah, usually I choose not to answer. But I have seen black. I don't know if I've ever. I said I'd pick African American, but to be honest with you, I don't know if I've actually ever picked that. The one I do remember seeing is black, and it has in parentheses. It says African descent and something. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. You did say earlier on the program when you've had forms.
Yeah, I did.
You said specific African American.
Yeah, I did. But I have to be honest, I don't know if I ever have. I mean, I would, but I don't know. I'm sorry. The only one that I do remember seeing was black African descent. I do know for a fact that I have picked other, and I've also chosen not to disclose. So I've been across the board, other, not disclosing, black, African American.
Okay.
So I guess I wrestle with it too.
Do you think it's inaccurate if you're classifying, if you are saying African-American at any point, do you think that's inaccurate and that in terms of racist being able to use that to get someone like you, where you were saying before that you're not, at least initially, were not as informed about what the African-American experience has been, where they can kind of pick individuals like yourself who say, oh, well, we're African-American, and put you all up front as the representatives. Do you think that's inaccurate? Do you think that's something that, you know, you should not be doing?
To be honest with you, I don't think I looked at it that deeply, as much as I found it irritating that they had the audacity to even ask that. I think that's for me where I think I came initially the problem I had with it, and it's usually and I'm just speaking as even as Africans also do have a problem with that. We're just like, why do you need to know this? Of what importance is this? You know. And in some places, a place in me, now I've been in America for quite a long time, that's very suspicious of why they're asking of that. Like, what do you want this information for? What are you planning to do? You know what I mean? And I'd much rather you don't know me that intimately. There's also that little bit of suspicion, like, I don't trust this question.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, like, why do they want to know? Are they trying to figure out exactly where? You know what I mean? It's weird.
Understood. Yeah. Do you have a website where you recommend folks to go to get more info, like when the film is available on Google Play or iTunes?
Yeah, we have, we have a website, and I'm going to have to spell it out for you. But we also have a Facebook page, which is just Africans versus African Americans. You type that on Facebook, the page comes up. And you'll see all the information is always updated on there, wherever it is screening, whenever it is going to be out, it's always up there. And the website, if you want to write it down, because it's actually a Lua word, which is Nyarnam, which is daughter of the lake, because my people are the people of the lake. Nyarnam, which is Nyarnam. So that's N as in Nancy, Y as in yacht, A as in apple, R as in Rose, N as in Nancy, A as in Apple, M as in Mary, .com. So those are the places that you can find information about. And if you go to the Facebook page and you send us a message, an email, we'll definitely respond if anybody has any questions. Or yeah.
Outstanding. I'm on your Facebook page right now.
Yes, you are. Yeah, you see it? It's all up in there.
I'm going to share, and if folks want any other information, oh, and it's got the website link there, so you can just get it to easy. So I'll link it, so that way people will have everything all in one spot, so they can go to the official webpage, they can go to the Facebook page, and you can see, check out if there's going to be a screening in your area, and you'll have all the details when the film is available on Google Play and iTunes. Go ahead.
Can I just say one more thing? Because one of your callers said something that I thought was really, really profound, and she had a really solid point. We do have to figure out a way. I'm not really plugged in. This is my first film, so I'm not really plugged into the industry per se. But I do believe that when it comes to radio and talk show, that we do have to figure out a way to start having African-American speakers in the airwaves, in Africa, because they do need to hear it from African Americans, and we're not hearing everything from CNN. We do need the people who are on the ground to talk about the experiences, so that there is, you know what I mean? So it's not that we're not getting all our information from CNN and all these talking heads. We're actually getting it from people who live in the United States, African Americans who actually live here. Like, I'm wondering how is the information about Trayvon Martin really disseminated in Africa? They were listening to the same rhetoric and the same news that you're listening to here. How is this dialogue, the dialogue of the incidences that have happened in Los Angeles, how are these things being disseminated to the continent of Africa? So I don't know if we have to create like an association of black radio that's for the entire diaspora, but we do need to start talking to each other over the airwaves. I think that's also very important.
Hear, 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 hear. I definitely support that. If anyone brainstorms on that, that would be grand as well. Please check out the Facebook page. I just posted it on both of my pages. It's linked in the details for the program, and I'll tweet it out as well so folks can access and get more information about the film. Again, the title, Bound, Africans vs. African Americans, A Silent Sibling Rivalry, scheduled crossing our fingers, February 2015, should be available. Thoroughly enjoyed the discussion. It was grand to have the dialogue, and we will definitely be in touch. Hopefully we can have you back on the road as you get more responses to how people are responding to your documentary work. We will look out for your future projects.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much to all the guests. Thank you so much. Great questions. Thank you so very much.
Pleasure was ours. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and we will be in touch, Ms. Owino.
You too, and have happy Thanksgiving, whatever that means. It's not really a good holiday, but, you know, hey.
Exactly. I don't celebrate, but I do appreciate the
well-wishes. Yeah, toss that in there with Columbus Day. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Be safe and keep up the creative work.
You too. Thank you so very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Bye.
Good evening. Context of white supremacy. Wowee, fascinating. I was in a good mood. This is rare, very rare. I talked to Pam today for about an hour and change, and I told her, despite everything that has happened over the last 48 hours, 72, or really the past 500 years, I was in pretty good spirits today when I talked to, even before I talked to Pam, then I was in great spirits. And normally we have the program and it'll drop a little bit for various reasons. But even today, I am still in grand spirits after the broadcast. I'm picking up a snickering in the background. I don't exactly know what's funny, but I'm still in grand spirits after the program. I'm even trying to see if I can find a black person for folks who follow on the Facebook page. I was getting my joke in that I was telling from earlier in the week. At any rate, as I said, we should be back tomorrow. As I was telling our guest, Ms. Owino, I don't do holidays. We don't do celebrations, certainly not quote-unquote Thanksgiving. We certainly do not have a whole lot as black people to be happy or thankful about, given everything that has transpired over the past week and or the last 500 years. But we will be on the air tomorrow, our normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We will be here tomorrow evening looking forward. As I said, I'm very curious to hear what the dialogue is like once you all are, you know, with your loved ones and family members, people that you care about. Like, this should kind of be a weighty get together for black people anyway, given everything that has happened. Like, I would think racism would have to come up in some way, shape or form. I don't know if you're in the Ohio area.
Bullshit.
If I am picking up some background, as I was saying, it should be popping up in some way, shape, or form over the next 2-3 days while you all are hanging out. I cannot imagine how it would not, given what has happened in Ohio, given what's happened in New York, given what's happened in Missouri. I just cannot imagine folks getting together and there being no dialogue about all of the problems that we are facing. So I am very curious If by the time we come on air tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, if folks have been hanging out and you all do talk about racism, definitely let us know. Dial in. We'll have more details about the broadcast posted this evening for the program tomorrow. At any rate, again, we are fundraising for the end of 2014. Hopefully folks will invest. If you've gotten any constructive information from the broadcast, racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener-supported counter-racist radio. When you get the blog, you will see the PayPal in the top right corner. If you are not feeling PayPal, drop us an email, and we will be sure to get you a physical mailing address if you would like to support, invest in the context of white supremacy. Definitely. Thanks to everyone who has invested over the years. We are super grateful for all the folks who have supported our effort and hope the program has been, continues to be, worthy of your time, energy, and currency. That being said, I will take a quick commercial break, and we are almost at our 3-hour mark. So I will see if we have any time for folks to get a quick comment in before we wrap things up. But we'll do our quick commercial, and then we'll be right back. Context of white supremacy.
RacismDaily.com, your number one source for global news reports on race, racism, and overt actions of white supremacy. From Asia to the Americas to Europe to Australia to Africa, racism is not a thing of the past. It is our current reality. Be informed. Be globally informed. You should be the first to know. RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com. Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Do you need a one-stop shop for all of your multimedia needs? Triumphant Multimedia is a skilled team of professionals with a passion for great marketing and chic design. Our specialties include consulting, brand development, copywriting, and creative graphic design. That's second to none. We also offer photography, photo retouching, videography, and video editing. At Triumphant Multimedia, our goal is to provide highly effective creative solutions built to suit any individual need or budget. Give us a call at 678-732-8067 or check us out online at trimultimedia.com.
Everyone, welcome. This is Justice with the Cows Radio program. If you want to learn about, understand, and counter racism, white supremacy, be sure not to miss a Cows episode. We keep them jammed, packed with constructive information to sharpen your use of words to help eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy, ASAP. Also, to be able to invest in my counter racist efforts, co-hosting the Cows Radio program, please visit my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of work.
I got an uncle real crazy. My Uncle B, 55 years old, hates white people, married to a white lady. And he's sitting around going, you know, these crackers ain't shit, except for Susan. And he tried to explain the whole thing to me one day, say, yeah, I got a white wife, I love her, she love me, that's all that matter. But I tell you this, if the revolution ever come, I'll kill her first. Just to show these crackers I mean business. Motherfucker, cracker ass, motherfucker, cracker. Shit, cracker, motherfucker. What, hey, hi, honey. Motherfucker, cracker, I'll kill my cracker kid, too.
Right on. Folks are still snickering. I'm glad maybe other black people are in good spirits, too. That is grand as well. Number one, you can follow on Twitter. You can get updates. I post just general information related to racism, white supremacy on my Twitter feed. Other folks do as well. You can follow there at Until Justice. No nutty spellings or anything. At Until Justice. If you want to follow on Twitter, the Twitter was on fire this evening. Lots of folks were responding. A lot more people responding and what have you than they normally would during a live program. It can be a little distracting for me trying to work to do multiple things, but Twitter was very active this evening. So if you want to follow, again, at Until Justice. Again, we will be back tomorrow. So folks, looking like we are at the 3-hour mark, so you all might be out of luck today, but we will definitely be here tomorrow, and we should have time for folks to get any comments in if you have things you want to share about this specifically or observations on what happened in over the past couple days in Ferguson. We will have ample time for all of that tomorrow. One thing that I will, or I guess two quick thoughts that I will get in. Number one, I guess I'll make it three. One, I think I said on Monday about Timothy Wise and the rest of the folks, white people that allege that they are not racist, that they were going to be out on the warpath in the wake of all of this to talk about it and even throw some white people under the bus and say that they're racist and it's a shame how black people are treated. I heard Timothy Wise admitted racist doing an interview within the last 48 hours, and it started off. And it was a victim of racism who was doing the interview, but he started off talking about Uncle Tom black people. And then it went to, we have Uncle Tim in the building, and we call him Uncle Tim because he tells the truth about racism. And I just put my head down, like, wow. That was not a good spirit day to hear that, but I just put my head down like, wow, that right there is what we are trying to work to correct. There are many more things I could say about that, but I did observe that within the last 48 hours. Also, the metaphor that our female caller referenced about black people being in the position of Charlie Brown when Lucy moves the football and he misses it every time and falls on his head and everybody laughs at him, that's kind of the position that racists have black people in. Peppermint Patty was trending on Twitter as we were broadcasting live. I thought that was funny for many reasons as well. I heard so many folks online talking about Darren Wilson after he did his interview and they released his testimony to the grand jury where he said that he felt that Michael Brown Jr., this 18-year-old, was like Hulk Hogan, and he was like a child. Grabbing, even Timothy Wise discussed that. Although that is, you know, an intriguing metaphors, talk about that all the time. That is an intriguing metaphor. What I found to be much more revealing that I have not seen nearly as much commentary, he said that Michael Brown Jr. was like a demon. I thought that should have been like headline news everywhere. That should have been way more discussed, drawn way more attention than the Hulk Hogan analogy, which, as I said, that is telling, but black person, a black teenager being referenced as a demon by an armed white man, like, wow, that to me speaks volume about the mindset of racist man, racist woman, racist child, and this white suspected race soldier who killed this child in cold blood, a demon. You can, and this is in the grand jury testimony. They apparently heard this. This was a part of what they heard that led them to no bill this past Monday. The last comment that I had, I think when we were talking on Monday, there was I was saying that this reminded me a little bit of Trayvon Martin and how there was so much trauma and people being sad, black people being sad and feeling impotent and helpless and powerless and people articulating that verbally. Because I saw so much of that last summer, and I said, I think you're going to have a lot more of that this time as well. And to just kind of be on guard about that, not that, hey, we are human beings. It's human to be sad or to be angry about all of this. It's nothing incorrect. It's just you don't want to get in a cycle where you end up being depressed or really sad or feeling like this is just hopeless. You just don't want to allow yourself to be there. I think racists, they do a lot of excellent work to kind of put us in that position where we're just totally exasperated and can't just be on our job as soldiers to go about methodically solving this problem. But I've read a post I've referenced her work many times before, Brittany Cooper. She is a black female. She writes at Salon. She is a professor at Rutgers in New Jersey. But I've referenced her work quite a bit on the program. In fact, she wrote an outstanding piece on white rioters when they were up rioting at the Pumpkin Festival in October. She wrote a great piece about dangerous drunk white people. I posted it on Twitter. I posted it on my Facebook page as well just a couple weeks back. She wrote a piece. It's titled, I Am Utterly Undone, My Struggle with Black Rage and Fear After Ferguson. She posted this yesterday. If you want to check it out, I'll tweet it, Facebook it so you can read it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it was just one paragraph stood out to me. I read this to Pam earlier today, and this kind of got at my point about, you know, things that I think racists try to do when these sort of events happen. But she wrote, do you feel the struggle in these words, the utter inadequacy of them, the struggle to contain and train my rage on the proper white people and not all of them? I'm going to read that sentence one more time. The struggle to contain and train my rage on the proper white people and not all of them. The challenge of trying to narrate black rage and black pain and black fear and black freedom dreams deferred again in hopes that white folks would really understand. The resentment at my failure, the rage at my having to do so in the first place. I'm going to stop there. You can read the whole report. It is online. I'll post it, as I said, Facebook, tweet it, so you can check it out. But it's on Salon, titled, I Am Utterly Undone, My Struggle with Black Rage and Fear After Ferguson. And I just thought that was a profound statement for many, many reasons. And I think even some of those issues we discussed on Monday, at the end of the day for me, I think we would be in a much better position. And that she has BGQ, she's a victim. I'm a big fan of her work. I'm not, you know, criticizing at all. I think it would be, we would put ourselves in a better position to just get to the point of understanding what it means to be white. This is white culture. Massacring and brutalizing black people, that's white culture. That's white people. And not having any tears about that, not being upset about that, no hand-wringing about that, just that is what it is, and we move forward based on truth. I think that would put us in the best possible position and to totally, totally divest from the hope that white folks will really understand. Even that, I think even to me, it suggests somehow that white people are ignorant about what's happening, which that, again, I've touched on that many, many times before. That's not the problem at all. Anywho, we will be back on Thursday. If you have comments and what have you, want to get in on this, write a note and we will have time for you all to chat it up tomorrow. I hope if you are going to be hanging out with family members, I hope it is constructive first and foremost and rejuvenating, because I know a lot of folks have been saying just with everything that it has been stressful and unpleasant. So I hope that it helps to kind of get that black self-respect back up and to get you feeling better so that you can go out and be an effective counter-racist soldier in the war of white terrorism. Again, I hope racism comes up. If it does, definitely make a note of that and be ready to share, because I'm very eager to hear what folks are talking about around the table tomorrow. But again, that's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Pam gives her well wishes. We should be hearing from her soon as well, but her well wishes and hoping folks remain warm, safe, constructive, and codified. Thanks, everyone. Great questions. Enjoyed hearing from all of the folks, and I hope you got some constructive info from the broadcast this evening. We will see you in about 24 hours. Creator, help us remain patient with other Black people. Help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to call on our ancestors for the highest form of self-respect, dealing with any Black person, any area of people, activity. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. Context of white supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.